Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for March 29, 2005. I will also open a public hearing on SB 5509, the Department of Education Operations and Grants and Aids, and SB 5510, the Department of Education State School Fund. We have a lot of parties to testify this morning. I want to welcome you all. We will have to limit testimony to approximately about 3 minutes per person to have any hope at all of getting through everyone that has signed up to testify this morning. I'd like to start by calling Hillary Niedermeyer. Is she in the audience? Along with Brandon Bartels and it looks like Ben Wells. Please feel at ease and identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you feel comfortable.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, I am Hillary Niedermeyer. I am a senior at North Salem High School. I am the Future Business Leaders of America National President and Oregon FBLA State Officer. Before I go ahead and share my personal testimony with all of you, I would like to explain to you why so many of us have gathered here before you today. The reason is the Student Leadership Development Center. The Student Leadership Development Center provides state leadership, support, and coordination for the 7 professional student leadership organizations in Oregon. Those are AFOC, DECA, FBLA, FCCLA, FFA, HOSA, and Skills USA. Through the center's work with students, teachers, and schools, students in Oregon have local, state, and national opportunities to develop and enhance their academic leadership, citizenship, and career skills in preparation for adult responsibilities. The 7 leadership organizations housed in the Student Leadership Development Center are an integral component of career and technical education, connecting activities between academic and work-based learning. They provide learning experiences that are hands-on and that prepare students for the demands of the future. I am honored to speak before all of you today on behalf of one of those organizations. So, a little trip down memory lane. At the age of 3, I wanted to be a princess. At 7, I wanted to be Belle off the Disney classic Beauty and the Beast. But at age 10, I knew I wanted to become a teacher. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be so many different things. Of course, with each new season of life, there was a new role model who I aspired to become. Then, with time, I began to realize who I truly was. And I could also see how those around me were influencing who I wanted to become. One of the biggest questions in the minds of students today is, when will I ever use this? How does this apply to me? There's so much information swirling around them that it is difficult to grasp onto one thing or one single direction. That's the value of the Student Leadership Development Center and Future Business Leaders of America, also known as FBLA, the organization I served as national president. Where there's confusion and frustration, FBLA provides focus and allows students to see the real-life implications of what they are learning, thus equipping them with the essential skills and abilities that will be crucial as they enter the workforce of tomorrow. When FBLA is incorporated into a teacher's curriculum, the teacher has a powerful tool for making education exciting, relevant, and highly interactive so that students can gain more than a grade. They have the unique opportunity of taking what they learn in the classroom and applying it to the real world. School is a place where some of the most valuable and memorable lessons in life are learned. Interestingly, though, not all of these lessons come from within the classroom. A lecture, an assigned reading, or quizzes do not completely prepare a student for the test they will face in life. That's where the professional technical student organizations that are housed in the Student Leadership Development Center come in. They provide application and hands-on learning. When a teacher has the instructional tools to turn a lecture into a life lesson through leadership, now there's a spark. When a student realizes that in life they don't just get a grade, they get a paycheck, and that the amount of their paycheck is based on quality performance, integrity, and initiative, there's another spark. That's what makes FBLA and the Student Leadership Development Center so powerful. As a little girl, I never dreamed of becoming the FBLA National President. Being a princess, a teacher, or Belle off of Beauty and Beast seemed so much more exciting. But when I became a freshman, I said those very words. I want to become the FBLA national president. My FBLA advisor was an incredible individual who had a way of inspiring me like no one else. The way she taught her classes and incorporated FBLA made learning fun and rewarding. She taught me to be the change I want to see in the world and that the sky is truly the limit. We call it Future Business Leaders of America. For more than 50 years, Oregon FBLA has provided experiences that, when joined with business education and academic standards, create a positive impact on the families, the communities, and the businesses of today and tomorrow. What is truly impressive is that the tens of thousands of students who have gone through FBLA and the Student Leadership Development Center share the same great experiences that I have had. Their advisors and teachers have lit a spark within their souls, like mine did to me, and the positive influence and life lessons they have shared with their students through FBLA are truly priceless. FBLA provides students with invaluable tools that will ensure their preparation for the future. It allows students the opportunity to apply lessons from the classroom to real-life situations. It provides outstanding leadership training, and it motivates students to give back to their school, fellow students, and their community. Through FBLA, students find vital preparation for college and their future careers in business and management that they would not receive in the classroom. I am a product of the Student Leadership Development Center, and I can honestly say that I don't know where I would be without it. But I am just one of thousands who could sit before you today and share the same great experiences. The loss of funding for the Student Leadership Development Center would not just represent the loss of organizations like FBLA, but more importantly, it would represent the loss of an experience that can be gained nowhere else. I encourage you to place funding for the Student Leadership Development Center back into the budget so that it can continue to make the same impact in the lives of future students that it has made in my life. On behalf of our members, advisors, and alumni, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, I am Brandon Bartels from Silverton High School and the Willamette Valley Future Business Leaders of America Vice President. Today I would like to speak in favor of funding for the Student Leadership Development Center. Future Business Leaders of America has been an integral part of my education. I've gained the ability to apply the knowledge I've learned in class, poise and confidence in speaking, organizational and facilitation skills, as well as a vision and determination to accomplish my goals for the future. I've been an FBLA member since my freshman year of high school when my mother, a teacher at my school as well as the FBLA advisor, encouraged me to participate in some activity or club to help me become involved within the school and community. While FBLA is not a club, FBLA is the premier organization for students wanting to pursue a career in the business field. Simply put, the FBLA-PBL mission is to bring business and education together in a positive working relationship through innovative leadership and career development programs. FBLA is not an extracurricular activity, it is an intercurricular activity. Most FBLA advisors will tailor their business classes to include FBLA-related events, activities, and competitive events. During my first 2 years as an FBLA member, I participated in chapter activities such as community service projects, chapter fundraising, and organized meetings. I also had the opportunity to participate in competitive events that FBLA has to offer. I attended many conferences through which I was able to apply and test my knowledge in areas such as word processing and network design, both of which included information from classes I had previously taken. Not until I was inspired and encouraged to run for state office did I realize the true power FBLA has to impact members. As a sophomore, I decided to run for state office in order to gain valuable leadership and organizational skills. I was elected and served as district vice president during my junior year, then Willamette Valley regional vice president my second year. During my terms as vice president, I've had many opportunities to improve my skills in the areas of speaking, organization, facilitation, teamwork, and work ethic. I know from personal experience the enormous impact FBLA can have for a student during their high school career. It is my desire to see FBLA and the other professional technical student organizations continue for the current members. Please don't shortchange students from the opportunity to enhance their leadership and communication skills that will ensure a successful transition into the business world. It is imperative that funding for the Student Leadership Development Center be included in this year's budget and at least be kept at its current level.
Mr. Wells.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board, Chairperson Devlin. My name is Ben Wells, and I represent the largest student youth organization in the United States, the National FFA Organization. I'm a student in Newburgh High School. I've been a part of the Newburgh FFA chapter for all 4 years of my high school career, and I want to talk to you today about the opportunities and the advantages the FFA has given me. When I entered high school, I didn't know what I was going to get out of it. The one thing that I did know is that I wanted to get as much out of my four-year tenure as possible. With that in mind, I signed up for Principles of Agriculture, offered by my FFA advisor and agricultural/vocation teacher, Mr. Bob Beckner. It wasn't just what I learned in the classroom that made agriculture so much fun and so inviting. It was the hands-on learning and opportunity to be able to apply what I've learned in the classroom in a competitive forum, the FFA. FFA helped to bring to life what the textbook said, or what Mr. Beckner would be lecturing about, by providing me the opportunity to give an animal a necessary vaccination, write and deliver a speech, properly run a business meeting, or developing an actual marketing plan for a local business. I've been involved in every aspect of FFA that FFA has to offer, from receiving numerous awards such as placing third in the nation in food science and technology career development event, to raising market lands for the past 3 years, to serving as current Newburgh FFA chapter president. FFA has provided me with the opportunities to lead, succeed, and achieve to what I've found is my full potential. I know that I'd not be who I am today, where I am today, or where I'll be tomorrow if it weren't for the opportunities FFA has provided me with. I have not only been able to succeed in FFA, but also in all other aspects of life as a result of my FFA experiences. I have not only received my SIM, but also my natural resource CAM strand as a result of my involvement in FFA. I'll be graduating with an honors diploma, a member of National Honor Society, have a 3.696 GPA, a four-year advanced placement program student, and future plans to attend Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana in the fall. The FFA helped me to set goals and pace myself to achieve these goals so I'll be better prepared for tomorrow. I'm a senior at Newburgh High School this year, and I have seen my peers looking for that finish line called graduation in June. But I'm here today, even with these being my last few months in this amazing organization, working hard to see if the funding is continued for the Student Leadership Development Center for future members, because I strongly believe in the effects and what it has done for me. Please remember, in this long, difficult process, the young people of whom will be affected by your decision. I've also included my written testimony, my resume, which I also submitted as a part of the job interview career development event, which I placed second at state convention this past spring break. So as you can see, there are numerous advantages to FFA, and it applies towards the real life.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. President,
yes.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'm just in awe of the talent we have before us this morning. I have a request. Hillary Niedermeyer is the national president for FBLA, and I would like, with your permission, to invite her to sit with the panel.
That would be
morning.
Fine if she would like to sit up on the right hand side there.
Maybe she'll choose not to.
I would be honored.
And I say that also noting that we're in Oregon, we're still striving when it comes to increasing the number of women in the Oregon legislature. So please do come and join us this morning.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your leadership role.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I just wanted to note that Mr. Wells addressed us as ladies and gentlemen of the board, and I thought that was very appropriate, Mr. Wells, because we are the board of directors for the state of Oregon, and we decide the budget. So it wasn't a misnomer by any means, and I appreciate your keen sense of awareness about that.
Thank you, Senator Walker.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
In this whole scheme of things, could you remind the committee how much money we're talking about for these programs and where did we place them in our first cut at the priority list so the audience kind of has an idea of feel where we're at?
My memory is correct. We placed them very high. and it's about about $735,000 out of a total education budget that in the governor's budget is about $6.5 billion.
I was saying, you know, we have those 26 vacancies in the Department of Education that probably are worth a couple million dollars. I'd pick some of those vacancies and trade them for this program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Molding, Joshua Palaba, and I'm going to probably even do worse than this, Kara Policio. And when you speak, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. I'm Jonathan Malding from the Silverton FFA chapter. I'm a junior at Silverton High School. When I first entered high school, I was an extremely shy and timid person. I would sit in the back of the classroom in all my classes and try to go unnoticed as long as I could. I had very few friends and did not enjoy socializing at all. But that all changed once I joined the FFA. I've been in the FFA for 4 years and FBLA for 1 year, and the experiences that I have had are life-changing. I'm definitely not the only person here that could tell you that the student leadership organizations we have change lives. Today, these organizations are creating high-quality leaders to help lead this great nation in the near future. I have learned in my entire high school career, I did not learn leadership in the classroom. A student does not learn leadership in a science class or math class, but they do learn leadership in student leadership organizations like FFA and FBLA. I know that if funding is cut, we will see less leaders being developed and more people not reach their full potential. Students learn valuable lessons about life that you cannot learn anywhere else. They not only learn to be great leaders, but also learn to be great citizens. If funding is not provided, we will see big changes this year. You will not see the FFA at State Fair because we will have no one to coordinate it for us. And with that, the State Fair already having problems, this could be a huge loss to the fairgrounds. You will not see state officers provide leadership training to over 100 schools with the ag program. And because of the lack of manpower, you will not see the student leadership organizations competing at the state level. And if our members do not compete at the state level, we will not have Oregon represented at nationals. We have the potential to be the future leaders of Oregon, but we need your support to help us reach our full potential. I ask you today to support us and Oregon's future by funding the Student Leadership Development Center and all of us and its students. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Joshua Hollibaugh. I am a senior at Newburgh High School and is currently serving as the Newburgh High School FFA and FBLA vice presidents. Over the course of my 4 years in high school, I've had the pleasure of participating in multiple professional technical leadership organizations. As I reminisce over my high school career, it has been the times I spent actively participating in these organizations that possess the greatest meaning to me. The memories and stories that I've created within FFA are the most vivid and pure experiences I will have to share with my future children and grandchildren. I shall forever remember walking on the main stage at the FFA National Convention to receive my award for placing second in the nation in environmental science. Beyond looking out into the audience of over 50,000 and the joy of placing so highly in the nation, it was knowing that my parents had seen me on live television and their phone message congratulating me to occupy the greatest meeting in my heart. Unfortunately, this memory and many others may not have existed had the legislature not stood, protected the funding of the Student Leadership Development Center and professional technical student leadership organizations 2 years ago. Once again, Oregon's youth need the support and empathy for the salvation of their hopes and futures for the allocation of funding for the Student Leadership Development Center, professional technical student leadership organizations. This year, I had the honor of being named a semifinalist in the Coca-Cola Scholars Foundation program. Out of over 104,000 high school seniors from across the nation, I was selected to be within the top 2%. I credit my success with this honor and many others to my activities within FFA, Anyone can achieve good grades and standardized test scores, but few are willing to invest the long hours and perseverance necessary for success in PTSLOs. It has been the numerous state championships, national and international placings in competitions that have made my application stand out. These distinctions have shown dedication, perseverance, leadership, and service more than any other activities within my college and scholarship applications. As more and more colleges and scholarships are designing keen participation in activities, just as much as grades and test scores, why must we curse future generations by eliminating their possibilities? Must our generations be remembered for ending Oregon Youth's ability to compete for college acceptance and scholarships? It has been within PTSLOs that I've learned the most valuable knowledge, skills, and talents in my high school career. The thrill of competition constantly drives me to excel and push myself to my limits, rewarding me with aptitudes for life which I may have never possessed otherwise. During school, I may rapidly memorize random information simply because it'll be on the next test. While in PTSLOs, I actively learn and apply the knowledge and skills I learn on a daily basis. This application of the FFA motto, doing to learn, earning to live, living to serve, has instilled within me these aptitudes for lifetime rather than just for the next test. I've experienced a multitude of passions and experiences during my time in PTSLOs, from working in a bioanalytical chemistry lab, evaluating streams, showing livestock, to running a meeting using parliamentary procedure, organizing fundraisers, and writing press releases. The opportunities for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success have abounded throughout my experiences in professional, technical, student leadership organizations. My experiences in PTSLOs have continually shaped and developed me to the confident individual I am today. I've matured into a resilient, intelligent, and professional leader through PTSLOs. Hopefully, many more youth may continue to develop these traits within Oregon. Unfortunately, these traits are on the chopping block in Oregon. We must hold ourselves accountable for the fate of future generations and ask ourselves certain questions. How will we respond to our siblings, children, and grandchildren's questions when their dreams are shattered as they learn they may no longer partake of the opportunities we cherish in our youth? How shall we respond when our children receive no scholarships because their application isn't competitive compared to the youth of other states? Hopefully, we shall never have to answer these questions. Hopefully, Oregon's youth may continue to grow and shine with continued support for the programs they hold dear to their hearts. I urge you to please continue in word, deed, and financial means, supporting Oregon's professional, technical, student leadership organizations and the Student Leadership Development Center. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Cara Palacio, and I am the 2005-2006 Oregon FFA State President. Since the National FFA organization began, it has been benefiting the lives of students all across our nation. The National FFA organization is the largest youth organization in the nation that encompasses over 50 associations. Oregon's youth has been benefiting from this organization for the past 77 years. I, too, have greatly benefited from this wonderful organization. When it occurred to me that the Student Leadership Development Center may cease to exist, I was devastated. The FFA has provided hundreds of opportunities for me, and not granting those same opportunities to the future youth of America is simply unacceptable. The FFA mission statement reads, "The FFA makes a positive difference in the lives of students by developing the potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agriculture education." I have been fortunate enough to experience a positive difference in each of these three different areas. Not only through agriculture education, but through career development events, leadership conferences, and different FFA experiences. The FFA is certainly not about cows and plows anymore. In fact, it has not been for quite some time. The FFA is considered the premier leadership organization in our great nation. I myself have been involved in several officer teams, been into countless leadership conferences, and I've come away from these events with a sense of leadership that is truly hard to come by. It has been amazing to watch myself grow from a young freshman into a confident leader who is preparing to lead our association in this upcoming year. FFA is one of the few organizations that does not thrive off of its instructors, but instead, it thrives off the students who become the instructors. The FFA provides a safe environment for America's youth to grow and experience new things. Throughout my 4 years in FFA, the program has encouraged me to try everything from public speaking to judging soil. Instead of testing my wings in an unsafe environment, I have been involved in a program that allows me to fly as free as I'd like. FFA allows its members to keep animals, FFA allows its members to grow emotionally. The FFA is not an easy program to be involved in. There are records to be kept, animals to be cared for, speeches to be rehearsed, and that's only for 1 month out of the entire year. The FFA encourages responsibility, strong work ethic, and a sense of morals. It first occurred to me when reciting the FFA creed. In the 5 short paragraphs, it lists all the morals FFA members hold dear to their hearts. It has taught me to be responsible and practice harder in order to find success. The FFA has taken my responsibility, my maturity, my work ethic, and my morals to a much higher level than any average high school student. Throughout my life, I've heard that the youth are America's future. It seems to me that vocational education is the only thing that is preparing our youth for the future. The FFA is taking children and turning them into career-ready adults. I was inspired by the FFA Supervised Agriculture Experience programs to start my own riding business. I began teaching riding lessons to over 30 kids and managed a successful business, which was all inspired by the FFA. I have found so much joy and knowledge in the FFA. It would devastate me to know that due to budget cuts to the Student Leadership Development Center, other high school students around our state would not be able to experience these great changes the FFA has made for me. Vince Lombardi once said, "Leaders are made, they are not born. They are made by hard effort." The FFA is making great efforts to produce these great leaders, which is something I believe is important enough to fight for. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Chair?
Yes.
Senator Cordley?
Then Representative
yes.
March.
I am struck by your statement that your experience has allowed you to fly as free as you like. Are you familiar with Oregon's motto?
I am not. I was actually new to the area, and the FFA has really allowed me to see all of Oregon and get a really good insight on it. But
Oregon's motto is, "She flies with her own wings." And Mr. Chair, I would like to invite this state president to also join us on the panel.
I would be honored. Thank you.
Yeah. Quite welcome. Please come up. Thank you very much for your testimony. We have approximately over... Yes.
I just wanted to make one comment as you join us up here, and that when I was in Future Farmers of America, our chapter was trying to battle for equal rights for women to join FFA, and I'm glad to see a state chapter president here. It's been a long road, but you're leading us, so thank you.
Thank you.
It will be my honor, Mr. Chair, to have someone to Ben sit next to me, state president.
Yeah. Ours. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In an effort, we have about 30 plus people left to testify in about less than 90 minutes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to call up the next panel, then I'm going to switch pages, and I'm going to keep switching pages so we get as many people as possible from as many different areas as possible. So the next panel is Kurt Haley, John Lindstrom, and Cassidy Nielsen. And also on deck, so to speak, Dolores Moss, Katie Larsel, and Rex Higgins. Please proceed.
Thank you.
Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Curtis Haley. For the record, my address is 533 Roper Road, Eugene, Oregon, zip code 97402. They told me that's a good thing to say, so I said it. I am the current president of the Oregon Association of DECA, and I am here to support funding for the Student Leadership Development Center and its associated student organizations. I'd like to begin by thanking you all for taking the time to hear us today. I was actually surprised to see this many people in the audience, but I think it's a very good testament to how much these organizations mean to these students and others. Successful students in Oregon schools can often attribute their success to myriad factors. Good parenting, dedicated teachers, unbridled motivation, and of course, the opportunity to excel. I know this because it's the story of my life. Throughout elementary and middle school, I was your typical above-average student who got A's in all of his classes and then went home and played video games. School was a place to go, sit, and hopefully endure. When I reached high school, I was approached by a group of students about joining something called DECA. They said it taught business skills, and it offered me the chance to go to Orlando, Florida, so count me in. My limited knowledge of the business world led me to believe that marketing was all about numbers and math, which I had always excelled at, so I decided to give it a shot. I soon found out that DECA wasn't just math. DECA taught marketing. And marketing included everything, from economics to entrepreneurship to why what Enron did was illegal. Furthermore, it emphasized leadership, social understanding, and consciousness of the needs of the world. DECA opened doors that were hidden before. Through DECA, I raised over $10,000 for orphans in Eastern Europe using marketing and personal presentation skills. I became fluent in the language of commerce, obtained skills critical to job seeking and job performance, and learned to embrace the idea that marketing is not about exploiting people to make a buck, but about serving their needs and wants to the best of one's ability. It also taught me leadership. I am the confident, inspired, passionate person that sits before you today because DECA provided that avenue for me to become him. Becoming Oregon DECA State President is just the beginning for me. My goal is the U.S. Senate and ultimately the White House. I'm not the only person to utilize organizations funded by the Student Leadership Development Center either. Back at Willamette High School, my home school, students join DECA for a plethora of reasons. My friend Courtney wants to use it to launch her into a career in fashion. Laura, our current chapter president, is all about getting to know people better and improve her social skills and her pending future. Kyle wants to do something in accounting. Carissa doesn't know what she wants to do yet, but she says that she wouldn't trade anything for the experiences DECA has given her, and neither would I. These students are successful in competition also. Just last year, no school in the world won more international titles and series events than Willamette High School. DECA, FELA, FFA, HOSA, all of these organizations survive almost entirely on the funding that the state gives us. And I'd like to mention that when I opened up the Register Guard today and looked at the front page, I saw that the ability to sell the sugary foods that kids love may be taken away from us soon, which, again, is another vital source of funding. So in a lot of ways, we have both things up in the air right now. All of these organizations survive almost entirely on the funding that the state gives us, and failing to fund these organizations severs a vital lifeline that provides support for thousands of students. We need this money to continue educating children and enriching their lives in and out of the classroom. Some have the perception that the Student Leadership Development Center and its associated PTSOs teach only skills like welding or carpentry. This couldn't be farther from the truth. Through organizations like DECA, FBLA, and HOSA, students can learn almost anything. Accountants, bloggers, entrepreneurs, doctors, lawyers, even senators and representatives in the Oregon legislature can all be produced from these student organizations. The sky is the limit. It's not so rare to find a product of organizations like FBLA or DECA. When raising money to go to ICDC, where I ultimately took home a second-place trophy, I talked to Shannon Nill of Guarany Motors. He supported us fully, explaining that he was a DECA alumnus himself. While job searching, my girlfriend chatted about DECA with the manager of our local Buckle clothing store. He didn't have any pressing hiring needs, but he did have an invitation to enlist his support for whatever DECA needed. He, too, was a DECA alumnus. Members of organizations funded by the SLDC consistently can be found in classrooms around the state of Oregon, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars for charities like Eastern European Orphanages, or MBA, winning trophies, learning valuable knowledge of the world around them, and developing into the leaders of tomorrow. When deciding funding, consider the kids who will be affected. Think of Kyle, the accountant, Laura, the social butterfly, and Courtney, the fashion designer. Then think of a young Curtis Haley sitting on his couch, watching TV, doing nothing. These kids know not of politics or partisanship, but merely of a future that can happen if given the right opportunities. Let's keep this wonderful door open before it is shut for good. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify before you today. I would be happy to answer any questions after my partners are done testifying.
Please proceed.
Hello, my name is John Lidstrom, Honorable Members of the Committee, Mr. Chairman. I'm the outgoing State President of Oregon DECA, an Association of Marketing Students. I'm a four-year member of Philomath High School DECA and a senior. I'm also currently running a campaign for Western Region Vice President of National DECA. DECA is a high school organization that offers a wide range of competitions, from its general marketing knowledge tests to its real-life business role plays to its written business proposals. 4 years ago, DECA's Western Region Leadership Conference was in Portland, Oregon. My chapter took a large delegation of students, seeing as we were only an hour and a half away. One of those students was a freshman who didn't like to speak in public, knew virtually nothing about marketing or DECA, and was not much of a leader of any type. I was that freshman 4 years ago. I joined DECA because of the great time I had, and it changed my life. Without DECA, I do not know where I'd be or what I would have done for the past 4 years. Throughout my 4 years of DECA, I have been able to travel to many great places and meet so many people while learning about marketing and leadership. I've attended the past 4 Western Region Leadership Conferences, the past 2 Western Region Officer Training Camps, the past 4 Oregon DECA State Career Development Conferences, the past 3 International Career Development Conferences, with the highlight this year in Anaheim being the International Career Development Conference, where I will run a campaign for Western Region Vice President. Since 1946, DECA has offered its high school members co-curricular education in the fields of marketing, management, and entrepreneurship. Students travel all over the nation learning about leadership and receiving the necessary skills to implement these marketing tools in the workplace. In 1955, the handful of chapters that chartered the Oregon Association of DECA did not know how long it would last. Now, Oregon DECA's long tradition of excellence and achievement is 50 years old and 50 years strong. Originally for me, DECA was just a way to miss school and travel, but it became so much more so fast. It became hands-on leadership training in the fields of marketing and management while learning leadership skills. My sophomore year, I decided to take the leadership experience to the next level by running for the District 2 Vice President of Oregon DECA. That year was such a rush of excitement and energy that I decided to run for State President, and I've been a 2-year state officer. DECA does so much for its members. They'll have the chance to receive one of many scholarships that only DECA provides to its members. Major companies will give them job opportunities, and most of all, they'll have a chance to meet lasting friendships that will last the rest of their lives. I'm a great example of this again, seeing as Safeway contacted my local chapter advisor and told him that they were willing to hire DECA associates. He told me, and I went in and received my first job fairly easily, which is a good thing because it's giving me the experience to move up in higher fields. I also received one of the DECA Safeway Partnership Scholarships, which is $1,000 towards higher education, which I will either be attending Oregon State University next year, Seattle University, or hopefully, if all goes well, Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. The true success of DECA is in its co-curricular marketing competitions. With over 30 marketing, management, and entrepreneurship-based events, students learn the skills that are relevant to today's fast-paced corporate world. Oregon DECA and the Student Leadership Development Center, where DECA is housed, are in jeopardy because there's currently the funding for the Student Leadership Development Center has been completely eliminated from the budget, as I'm sure you are now aware of. Throughout the Student Leadership Development Center, DECA would not have the funding necessary to continue operating, as well as the other 6 PTSLOs. This would be a great loss to the state of Oregon, as well as 40 chapters across the state, and 1,600 marketing students would no longer have the chance to participate in DECA. Not only would there be no competition at the state level, but no members from Oregon would be eligible to attend the International Career Development Conference, where DECA and Oregon DECA would be a tremendous loss because in the 50 states, Oregon DECA is a leader in international competition. We are the homegrown future leaders of the state of Oregon, and we need your help to continue achieving. I urge you to continue the support for the Student Leadership Development Center, which provides DECA and FBLA, FFA, FCCLA, AOFC, and many others the funding Without this source of funding, it will be a tremendous educational loss to the state of Oregon. Thank you for your time.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Cassie Nielsen. I'm from the Canby FFA chapter, and I'm here today to talk to you about the impact FFA has had on my life and those to come after me. I've been an active member of the FFA for 5 years and have overcame many challenges. My freshman year of high school, I was on the verge of dropping out and only obtained 4 credits my freshman year. I rebelled against anything that had to do with school except for FFA. I was active in every activity available to me and excelled where no one thought I could quit. My sophomore year, my life changed. My parents got a divorce and I moved to another school. I was once again on the verge of dropping out. My school life was hard, and I had a breakthrough. My FFA advisor became my lifeline. He pushed me to succeed. I started to show promise. My grades improved, and school was now a haven. I enjoyed going to school and being more active in the FFA. I even made the honor roll. A success I attribute to my advisor who believed in me. The FFA has helped me to become the person I am today. I am confident speaking in front of crowds. I have learned many lifelong skills. I've met people throughout the nation, and just last week I achieved the highest honor bestowed upon an FFA member at the state level. I became the 2005 Oregon State FFA Star Farmer. I'm a third-generation sheep rancher for my family, and I would like to make my children become the fourth generation of our family to wear the national blue and corn gold at the FFA. My family is not the only one to pass on this tradition. There are several from around the state that would like to have the opportunity to continue on this tradition. Thank you for this opportunity to be able to testify in front of you today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you all for your testimony. Next up is Dolores Moss, Katie Larcel, and Rex Higgins. And on deck we have a group that's many of which are from more than 100 miles away. Jan Cayley, Leo Thiessen, Mary Nanette, and I'm going to really have difficulty with this, Judy Tokimone, and okay. Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Senator Devlin, members of the subcommittee, my name is Dolores Moss. I live in Portland at 921 Southeast 84th Avenue. I'm an accountant working at a firm in Southeast Portland in a retail business, and I live in Senator Gordley and Representative March's districts. The future of Oregon's children are tied up in the decisions that you and your colleagues are going to be making in the days ahead. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, Oregon in 1989 was ranked 16th among the 50 states in purse student spending. Over the next dozen years, we fell from the national average, from above the national average, to 10% below. We went from spending $221 more to $959 less per student, and we fell from 16th to 31st place among the 50 states in student expenditures. In the period from 2001 to 2003, Oregon's per student spending declined 2.4%, while the national average increased 3.7%. Oregon's children are being shortchanged, and our economy will continue to pay the price until we stabilize and then replace funding for public schools. Strong schools draw and keep qualified workers. Years of inadequate school funding has resulted in one of the shortest school years in the nation. In addition, overcrowded classrooms, outdated textbooks, and outdated science labs have resulted. $5.4 billion for the next biennium is not an adequate K-12 school funding. It merely maintains the status quo after many years of cuts. It will not come close to ensuring Oregon's children have the educational opportunities that will best allow them to compete for college placement or join the workforce with appropriate skills. A $5.4 billion K-12 education budget can be achieved. By looking at the $8 billion in current tax breaks, some serve a public purpose, but many do not. Too many benefit only the wealthiest of Oregon citizens and draw needed revenues away from schools and other public services. State corporate minimum taxes need to be increased. Thank you, Representative March, for introducing House Bill 2645 as a step in that direction. The corporate and individual kickers need to be set aside until Oregon returns to a budget level consistent with pre-recession revenues, adjusted for inflation. Let's delay building new prisons and direct those funds to education and work to reform the mandatory sentencing laws in this state as a means of reducing the ever-growing and expensive prison population. I beg you, don't neglect Oregon's children. Fund K through 12 education at a minimum of $5.4 billion for the next biennium. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dolores.
Please proceed.
Certainly. My name is Katie Larcel. I'm the chair of the Park Rose School District in East Multnomah County. And I'm here today, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify. I'm here today to counter the low numbers that we've been hearing, seen in the newspaper. The governor didn't do us any favor by starting out with 5-0. I've been surprised at how slowly that number has moved up. And I know that 5.4 has been mentioned over and over as a number that is a no-cuts budget. I think it's caused consternation even in some circles because they think it's so high. Here's my key sentence. If you don't remember anything else I say, please remember this. 5.4 is not a no-cuts budget for Multnomah County. 5.4 is not a no-cuts budget for Multnomah County. I've been meeting with my colleagues on other boards in Multnomah County. We have representation from the six largest districts, and we've put together a number, and it's 6.0. So hopefully that doesn't cause anyone to have heart problems, but that is the number that we need in Multnomah County. And the only reason that 5.4 is considered a no-cuts budget is because the other districts have taken such draconian cuts that for them the 5.4 is a no-cuts budget. Now, at our budget, and the reason that we say 6.1 is because, as most of you know, Multnomah County has the I-tax. Now, the I-tax is going to be gone in 06-07. And the I-tax has made all the difference for Multnomah County. If you want to come and visit my district or any of the other districts, I would say in East Multnomah County, because Portland is kind of creates its own weather, but you would see what adequately funding districts does. And when I say adequate, we're not rolling in dough. There are things that we cannot do that we would like to do. We have enough teachers in the classroom. When we have to make cuts in 06-07, the cuts will come from the usual places. And I'm not going to detail those because you're going to hear from other districts and they're going to tell you what they've had to do. But it comes from teachers in the classroom because at this point there aren't a lot of programs to cut. So basically, that's my message. 6.0 is really the number that you should be going for.
Mm-hmm. Please proceed.
Good morning.
My name is Rex Hagans, and I am, among other things, an enthusiastic 50-year-plus alumnus of the FFA Leadership Program. Good for you guys. I'm also currently a member of Stand for Children in Canby. I live in the Canby School District. I'd like to thank Chair Devlin and the committee for the opportunity to testify on this important topic today. As a longtime resident of Oregon and the grandfather of 9 school-age children in Oregon schools today, I can't tell you how strongly I feel it's essential that the legislature move immediately, I stress the immediately, to ensure that our schools are protected from further cuts. I'll leave the more detailed statistics to others, but when the Legislative Revenue Office itself reports we spend $611 per student less today than we did in 1992 after adjustment for inflation, and the local news last night tells us we have fallen below another 10 or 11 states on the per-pupil spending, it should be pretty obvious to anyone that Oregon schools are badly underfunded. My adult children got a world-class education in the public schools of Oregon. My grandchildren are getting short shrift, period. If Oregon has any hope of meeting its responsibilities to the next generation, as well as attracting new business, it simply cannot afford to allow the steady erosion of our public school system from a world-class system to one of third-world status to continue. Anything less than $5.4 billion K-12 budget for the next 2 years will not stop that erosion, and is simply not acceptable. I use the term erosion deliberately to remind you that a great deal of harm has already been done. We are clearly talking here today about doing the very minimum that's needed to stop the bleeding. Please keep that in mind as you make your decision about appropriations. Let me speak briefly to the situation of my home district, Canby. The Canby School District was out the biggest business in town, and the core business of that district is teaching and learning. We are blessed with an exceptional CEO, an outstanding woman, Superintendent Deborah Summers. Under her leadership, the schools devote 76% of their funds to direct teaching and learning, another 20% to support of the school buildings, and less than 5% to central district administration. Even more important, in the 5 years since 1999, the percentage of money spent on classroom instruction has increased steadily. I think that indicates the business is pretty well managed to maximize the bang for the buck. Yet in that same 5-year period, this key community agency has had to reduce its operating budget by some 15%, forcing some 37 specific actions which have damaged the core function of teaching and learning. The full list of these actions is attached to my written testimony. Prominent on this list of shame are significantly increased class sizes, cutting of school days, and the elimination of librarians, orchestra, second language at the middle school, and middle school athletics. What business could possibly sustain such damage to its core functions and still expect to produce a world-class product? I would remind you again that this damage is cumulative and at some point becomes nearly irreversible. If you do not act responsibly in this session, the very least that will happen is we will have this fester and build and worsen for another 2 years. How will that additional damage look in the Canby schools? An appropriation of the only $5 billion that the governor so astutely led us to believe is enough will force Canby to both immediately chop away to the tune of another $1 million in cuts in its already weakened core function of teaching and learning. It will also completely decimate the remaining reserves as the school tries to delay complete meltdown in those core functions. Some seal schools should not have a reserve fund. I remind you again that the school is the biggest business in Canby, and ask you whether you think any responsible large business would even consider not maintaining a reserve, especially in times of uncertainty. I believe the answer to that question is obvious. I am here today because I do not ever want to have to look my grandchildren in the eye and admit I failed to do all that's in my power to protect their right to a high-quality education. I urge you to join me in simply trying to do the right thing. Do your very best to move closer to meeting your constitutional responsibility to, quote, appropriate in each biennium a sum of money sufficient to ensure that the state system of public education meets quality goals established by law. Try your best, give it your best shot, and appropriate the full $5.4 billion needed to maintain the current level of education services to our children. Thank you.
Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, thank you all three of you for your passionate testimony. 3 decades ago, this state led the nation in education, as you so astutely pointed out, and also in per capita income. We now have a much poorer education system, and we also have the lowest per capita income, or one of the lowest per capita incomes in the state of in the United States. And during that 30 years, two things happened. Our, as you pointed out, education has eroded, and other public services. The demand for those services has increased, and we have stopped using our natural resources base. And so the monies have stopped flowing from the rural areas to the cities. They're now flowing in another direction. And for us to be able to provide in the future the needs for education and other social services, we have to deal with our economy. And you know, we hear your message, and I would hope that you would hear ours, that we have to repair our economy to develop the revenue flow so that we can provide these services. And for all of you out there, I think it's incredibly important for you to realize that we need to develop our business economy in the state so that we have the funds to do what you're asking for. Thank you.
Could I respond briefly?
Yes.
I'm a country boy, Senator. I come from a small town. I have great sympathy for what's happening in rural Oregon. I think it's a shame. I think things need to be fixed. I fail to understand how anyone can believe you're going to attract business to this state by falling into what I think is really taking on some of the elements of a nearly third world education system. The businesses I know of do not flock to places where the schools are poor. Thank you.
We have a group coming up that three out of the four are from more than 100 miles away, or one's a little short of 100. Jan Cayley, Leo Thiessen, Mary Nanette, and Judy, I will try to get your name. And if you could just take one of the extra chairs there, and then on deck will be Jessica Wolf, Patty Abel, and Lauren Blunt. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Lori Wimmer Whalen from the Oregon Education Association, for your record. I'm not going to testify today. You'll hear from the association next week, but I did want to introduce this panel coming from Bend, Roseburg, Baker City, and Westland Wilsonville. They are here to document for you the difference between 5.0 in the governor's recommended budget and 5.4, which, as you've heard from some of those who've testified before us, is not a no-cuts budget, but is what we believe to be at least a maintenance of effort budget. We thought that might be helpful to establish on the record. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. If I may comment on the students that we've just heard from, I am so proud of those students, and it touched me deeply to hear their testimony, and it's part of the joy that I get from education is to be part of those kids' lives. So I really appreciated their testimony. Thank
you. Could
you
identify yourself for the record?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah.
Yes.
Jan Cayley. I'm a counselor at Mountain View High School in the Ben Lapine School District. Thank you for listening to our testimony this morning. We are here to provide information and personal experience in the spirit of cooperative problem solving. Providing quality education for our students is one of the primary functions of the state government. Our legislators are ultimately responsible for a sufficient funding structure for our schools, but not without the help of the educational community and concerned citizens. In that role, I am asking you to approve a $5.4 billion education budget to maintain current programs. The Ben Lapine District is growing rapidly. Over the last 3 years, our district has grown by over 1,100 students. Over this period of time, Our district has lost 57 educational positions, and the student-teacher ratio has gone up by an average of 2 students per class. Vitally important support staff, our custodians, our teaching assistants, and even essential office assistants have been reduced up to 40% in some buildings. Our custodial staff can no longer perform routine maintenance of our buildings. Our counseling services has been dramatically reduced. Counselors have been completely eliminated in several of Ben's elementary schools. One middle school has only one counselor to serve 750 students. Our large high schools have only 3 counselors, down from 4 last year. My own caseload is over 400 students, including teenagers who are homeless, pregnant, and drug addicted. I've recently spoken with several suicidal students and facilitated one emergency hospitalization. The need for this kind of intervention is all too frequent. Without adequate funding, these needy students may not find the critical help when it was needed, let alone be able to succeed with their schoolwork. Because of program cuts, opportunities for graduation recovery have been eliminated in all but one high school site. This means fewer Ben students may graduate from high school because the programs designed to help them no longer exist. Like many other Oregon districts, Ben Lapine school year has been shortened by 5 days each of the last 2 years. Mountain View has student workspace available only if other students are absent. For example, there are only enough computers in our introductory software class to accommodate 28 students, even though at present there are 39 students registered in that class. One C block physical science class has 39 students doing experiments in a room that is safely designed to accommodate only 24. Although these and similar difficulties are many, students and teachers continue to do the best they can with what they have. Many students do adjust, but what about those less resilient students who need smaller classes in order to be successful, or the many students with difficult home situations who need emotional support? I lie awake worrying about these students because for them, school is more than an academic exercise. School is where they receive positive social contact and adult mentoring. Where will these students find their support when there are more cuts to school funding? All of our students need and deserve much more. No one needs to tell you how our per pupil spending continues to slide when compared with the national average. We now rank 31st in school spending. Oregon's dedicated educators will continue to work diligently to teach students given the available resources. We will continue to create classroom materials, fundraise, and spend our own money to improve instructional programs for our students. I don't know how many straws it takes to break the camel's back before schools lose their effectiveness, before the damage is irreparable. But let's not let that happen. The students of Oregon are too valuable and important for the future of our state. I implore you to support legislation that provides enough revenue to support a quality educational system for Oregon. The proposed $5.4 billion will maintain current programs. 5.0 or 5.2 means our district will face more cuts to our instructional days or further cuts in our instructional programs. I'm asking you to support this $5.4 billion level of spending. It is not only essential for our students, it is a sound economic decision. Investment in our schools and our young people will return many dividends for all of the citizens of Oregon. A long-term funding solution will take a great deal of coalition building, public education, and advocacy. Passing and implementing a stable, permanent, and adequate school funding solution will be an act of political and personal heroism. Thank you for your efforts in the face of these difficult and perplexing questions. Once again, the students of Oregon look to you for funding decisions that will provide them with a quality education. Thank you.
Thank you. For the sake of the members of the audience, I've been scrambling here trying to get permission to keep members here past the normal deadline for this committee, which is 10:30. And all of my House members, whose session starts at 11, have consented to stay. my Senate members are going to try to stay. Several of them, Senator Gordley is presiding in the Senate at 10:30, so she will have to leave. And Senator Walker, I believe, actually has to be on the floor to send a bill back to committee.
Potentially
send a bill back to committee, which is something that happens. So if that's the case, we will have approximately an hour and 20 minutes to get through all of the remaining testimony, and we still have about 30 people to go. So if people can try to be as succinct as they can, it will be very helpful. Yes.
Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Leo Thiessen. I'm a chemistry teacher at Roseburg High School. Not only am I one of the chemistry teachers at Roseburg High School, I'm the chairman of the science department at Roseburg High School. I wish to encourage you to fund a K-12 budget that is a maintenance of effort. That means $5.4 billion. What we've seen in the Roseburg District over the last couple of years has been a steady erosion of the quality of the program that we can provide. In 2002-2003, the district was forced to shorten the school year by 7 days. We managed through juggling of the calendar and things like that to only, the students only lost 3 days of instructional time. But when you take a look at that time, which was $2 million worth of district money that had to be reduced, that $2 million wasn't spent at the local Kmart. It wasn't spent at the local restaurants. So that $2 million that the employees of Roseburg's school district didn't spend in the community is a significant economic impact. In April of 2003, we had a reduction in force of 12 teachers. Now, what that meant was that we had to reduce 24 positions in the district. 12 of them were able to reduce simply by not rehiring for retirees' positions, but we had to reduce 12 teachers. This caused our average elementary class sizes to jump from 18 students to 25 students. This caused our secondary class sizes to jump from 24 students to 32 students. 12 teachers times $75,000 was a loss of $900,000 to the local economy in Roseburg. Those are significant numbers for a community of 20,000 people. One math class at RHS today has 54 students in a room designed for 24 students. To make room, they removed all the desks. All there are 54 chairs in that classroom. And the students sit and take notes on their laps as the math class. And this is not a low-end math class. This is one of our high-end math classes. The middle schools were impacted by increases in class sizes also, but the loss of shop classes, the loss of home economic classes, and the loss of computer technology classes all took place in our middle school. Now, from the standpoint of my end of the world, part of the trench in terms of science, in 2002-2003, we had 8 science teachers, and we had 1,000 science students at Roseburg High School. That was with a budget of $7,000. That's $7 per student per year in a science class. Today, we have 12 teachers, and we have 1,900 science students at Roseburg High School. And our budget is $10,000. Fortunately, it did go up. But when you take a look at per student, we're now down to $5.20 per student to provide education a year. Scientific and educational supplies, unfortunately, increase much more rapidly than just the regular inflation. As an example, last week we ran out of lithium, and we had to buy 25 grams of lithium. 25 grams of lithium a year ago was $42. 25 grams of lithium this year was $95. So our budget is continually being stretched because of inflation and because of the reduction. Repair and replacement budget is zero. We have no money for repair and replacement. We have been reduced to writing grants to repair microscopes and buy electronic balances for our science department. The 410 account, and that's our terminology for our general supply, is my department ran out of money last week, or actually the week before. And my principal praised me on how frugal I was because we ran out last week. Most of the other departments ran out about Christmas. The use of microscale, which is doing very small experiments using less material, things like that, has allowed us to continue to produce and have labs in our science classes, all of our science classes. Further reduction in staff or supply will reduce these kinds of inquiry activities, and basically what we'll end up doing is just having class demonstrations because we won't be able to afford to have the students do hand-on. College and university admission standards demand high school science opportunity be lab-based, and further reductions are going to jeopardize our students' opportunities for further education and to see achieve the SIM. Unfortunately, Douglas County has been impacted, I'd say disproportionately, because we're mostly a rural county, and so the small high schools around us, the Riddle, the Glide high schools, they aren't able to offer the kinds of classes that Roseburg, because of our size, is able to offer. So we are in essence a magnet for the communities around us. The students that want to take calculus, the students that want to take Chem 2, the students that want to take Physics 2 and 3, the students that want to take medical biology, we still are offering those classes, and those students come to us to take those classes from all around Douglas County. If we further reduce the budget, we're not going to be able to offer those classes not only to our students, but to the students of Douglas County. How will $5 billion budget affect Roseburg? Well, I talked to the business office yesterday, and they said that a $5 billion budget would require an additional cut of $750,000. That's on about a $30 million budget. You're either going to have to cut staff or you're going to have to cut expenditures. There's no other way to get around it. That reduction in staff will result in larger class sizes at the high school, at the middle school, and at the elementary. $750,000 is the equivalent of 10 teachers in Roseburg. A reduction in expenditures will also have a very drastic effect because my $10,000 that I have to spend on my 12 science teachers may end up being cut. And even if it's improved, is it going to be to the point that I'll be able to keep up with the inflation? Remember, lithium that has doubled in just a year. So again, what I'm asking you is that you support $5.4 billion. Now that's not maybe in the best of all possible worlds. Maybe that wouldn't be the number. But I believe it is the number that we can sustain here in Oregon. And hopefully sometime in the future, near future, we'll be able to develop a system that will adequately fund public education. I want to thank you for your time.
Good morning. My name is Judy Trokeem-Wayne, and I'm the elementary music teacher at South Baker Elementary in Baker City. I won't read my written testimony, which you have before you, but I will hit the high points. If you'll notice, during school year 2002-2003, my school district, which has a budget of approximately $14 million, cut $1.6 million. That's a huge percentage of our budget. We lost 18.8 FTE. That would be teachers, bus drivers, some administrators, some secretaries, all across the spectrum. We have buildings that are very old. In fact, one thing I did not mention in my written testimony is that the third floor of our middle school is condemned. It's not handicapped accessible, and it's pretty dismal to talk about our students going to a condemned building to go to school. During the 2003-2004 school year, my district cut an additional $1.4 million. We lost 3 school days, which was a huge blow to my students after having lost the other monies from the previous year. A total of $3 million cut from a $14 million budget. An incredible impact for us. We talked about going from a 5-day week to a 4-day week, and we're able to stave that off, but those talks will probably come back. It would be a huge blow to my community to have my students in class only 4 days. It would be difficult for parents. We would worry about vandalism and some of the trouble that my students could find who were not involved in FFA and FAL and using their time constructively, as these young people have done so well. We worry about all of these impacts on our community that are immeasurable, these problems that will crop up that we can't even begin to imagine. Last year, we were able to maintain. We were able to put some money back in the coffers. But if there is a 5.0 budget this year, for the next biennium, the first year, we would lose between $400,000 and $500,000. These are figures from my business manager. Now, if we translate that to $55,000 per teacher or $60,000 per day of school lost, that ends up being between 7.25 and 9.0 teaching FTE and 6.5 to 8.5 days. At this point, there's very little left for us to cut. We would be reducing staff, or we would be reducing days, which would be very difficult for our students. And as Senator Whitsitt pointed out, economically, we need more dollars. Our community would be not seeing these dollars, as my colleague also pointed out. These would be dollars not spent in Baker County and dollars having to be spent other ways. My students deserve much better than this. We have brilliant minds in Baker City, but my high school students, when they graduate, are less able to compete at a college level because we can't offer the higher level classes that they would need to be competitive with somebody here in the Valley that had opportunities to take high level physics and other classes. My students deserve a full school year. They deserve enough teachers to deliver high-quality instructions. They deserve all the materials that they can have to get that instruction. We need an educational level of at least $5.4 billion for the next biennium. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you for your testimony. Two of you folks are from Timber Country, and I'm a great advocate of going back to our natural resources. The history of all this stuff is that, you know, in the last session, the legislature stepped up twice and sent out tax increases to help fund public education. The voters turned them down. Politically, we're in a situation where for us to raise any more revenue, and I truly believe that we do need more revenue in the system. If the tax isn't going to do it, Senator Gorley's got some tax reform issues that she's talking about. I'm talking about some use of natural resources. If you look back on a historical basis, in 1991, the ability of Oregon to fund has basically been on a downhill climb. You could maybe put some of that in ballot measure 5, potentially. But also, that's also the decline of the use of federal forests. And so what I ask a lot of people is, are you going to choose a spotted owl, or are you going to choose a child? Because right now, we've chosen the spotted owl to the detriment of our children. People are saying that, but okay, what do you want? I mean, I think this whole committee here would like to fund at 5.4, but are we going to do it at the cost of our meth problems, at Oregon Project Independence, community colleges, higher education, Healthy Start? I mean, that's the choice we've got here, and I appreciate your testimony and your passion for doing all these things, but I mean, we have to make a choice here. Alaska has the biggest surplus of all the western states, $600 million, a surplus. They do not have an income tax or a sales tax. They have oil. What does Oregon do well? We grow trees. We're burning up 1 million acres every other year. I mean, at some point, the public has got to connect the dots here. I mean, the legislature, we're trying as hard as we can, actually, to do this stuff. We a lot of us stepped out on the limb, and some of us aren't back because we stepped out on the limb. There's some of our senators and representatives last time that voted for a tax increase got defeated in the election because their voters were mad at him. So you have to deal with the political thing, and I appreciate your coming in and really thank you. But I also want to give the message out that you guys have a responsibility, too, to go to your communities. And we have to make some choices here. So I thank you very much for coming, and I don't mean to be argumentative or anything, but I'm just trying to give you some of the political realities and the facts that we got going on here.
Chairman Devlin and committee members, my name's Mary Nemeth, and I'm the last of the four on the panel today. Thank you for letting us speak today, and we are giving up our times with our children today to give our pleas, so you do know that the passion that we are giving is for our children. I teach in Westland Wilsonville, and for those of you that don't know, it's just south of the Portland area. I've taught for 26 years. I started teaching in a 3-4 combination class in a rural community called Roy. Over the years, I've taught every grade 3-8. I've taught in rural schools, inner city Portland, and small towns like Woodburn, just north of here. With those different teaching assignments come some differences in student experience, family involvement, and school climate. Over the past 6 years, I've taught in the Westland-Wilsonville School District. Our district covers 42 square miles in Clackamas County. It includes the towns of Westland and Wilsonville and some of the outlying areas of the county. In our 7 elementary, 3 middle school, and 2 high schools, we serve the educational needs of about 8,000 students. These students come from a wide variety of backgrounds, from economic circumstances that include some very wealthy members of our communities to a rising number of free and reduced lunches. About 90% of our high school students go on to 2- and 4-year colleges. So academically, we do very well. When I taught in Woodburn, I routinely scavenged glassware from companies that had put them in the recycling bin so I could use them in my science labs due to lack of funds. I bought outdated microscopes at the Oregon State University warehouse with money that I'd raised by selling T-shirts for our science department fundraisers. I got the opportunity to move to this new district in Westland Wilsonville, where I was told that community members would simply write me a check for what I needed. If I needed a new microscope, it would be there for me. And imagine how delightful that sounded, and so I made the trip. But as the effects of different ballot measures made themselves known to district managers, I've seen no checks for equipment. In fact, of the 20 microscopes that we have at the school that I'm in right now, half of them for the last 5 years have not been in working order. We didn't have the money to be able to repair those. Lenses were out, lenses were cracked, eyepieces were too foggy to make out images. Only this year did we get the okay to go through and get a repairman to come in and fix them. Even in a district where we have national merit scholars regularly, some of the wealthiest community members in the surrounding districts, and well-attended parent meetings with parent involvement, we can't seem to afford to do what we need to do for our students. I'd like to share with you just a few of the experiences as a teacher in this district in what is perceived to be a better off district than some of my colleagues. Due to limited funding that has come, we have deferred maintenance projects that have happened where we have now the trash can sitting in the library where the roof has been leaking and the rainwater comes down into our library. Heating and cooling projects have been so cobbled together that in 3 of my classrooms that are next to me, temperatures vary from 86 degrees on a normal day where the outside ambient temperature is less than that to 66 degrees in my classroom where kids are wearing coats. We have janitors every other day with no replacements if one is sick. Teachers use their own brooms and dustpans to keep their classrooms free of debris. A year ago in March, there was a spending freeze on supplies, so we had no staples, no paper, no rubber bands, no office supplies whatsoever, and teachers went out and of their own money bought supplies to be able to photocopy for students that were in need. We have students that are asked to bring a ream of paper at the beginning of every school year so that we can stockpile those long enough to make it to June so we can actually use those. Personally, I average $800 out of my own salary for my own classroom. National average, according to NEA, is $600 per teacher in the United States that we supply for kids. Middle school athletics were cut for an entire year, and only students who had hundreds of dollars for private clubs could play. After-school activity buses are now cut at the high school due to funding.
At the middle school level, they were cut for 1 year, and that meant that no student could stay after school unless a parent could come and get that student after they'd received help. Sports at the middle school, when they were reinstated, came at the price tag of $150 a student. Our teaching schedule was rearranged so that teachers were asked to teach more classes due to a 2.5 reduction in our staff for each of the middle schools. That meant we no longer had time for our at-risk students. We have one counselor for 652 students. We've had four cuttings this year of students, and we have three meth users that have no one other than that one counselor to be attending to them. Parents created a thing called the Foundation that raises money for our educational needs by auctions and other events. Parents on their own put together these events and raised $160,000 that go into the foundation that supports all of our schools in our district. My classes 6 years ago were averaging 25 or 26. I now average 31. To give you an impact, when you say I've only got five or six kids more in a classroom, my second period class with the 31 students, of the 31, I have 13 that are on individual education plans for learning disabilities. I have six that are on behavioral contracts to keep them under control in my classroom. Four of them are diagnosed with ADHD, which makes them a little zippy in the mornings. One of them is not able to read much or to engage in academics and was only in my classroom because he was waiting for a living skills class, which is only offered in one other of the school middle schools. I have no instructional aid for this class due to funding cuts. With high maintenance, these students, average and gifted students, have a very hard time getting my attention because I have so many other needs. That leaves 74% of my students in just that one class being special needs to attend my attention. We're working really hard to deliver a first-class education to every one of our students. After all, 90% of our kids do go on to college in my district. I'm very lucky for that statistic. But if we are struggling this hard in our district, you can see that the testimony I'm giving to you today is magnified in my colleagues' classes. I really thank you for what you're doing, and I know you have a tough job. Know that these are the real things that are happening in our classrooms today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. As a member of this particular committee and having served on the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee now for several sessions, I keep hearing about the dismantling that is taking place in our schools all around the state, and it is so disheartening. My question for all of you and for the audience, this is not scientific, but how many of you would support a sales tax dedicated to education, pre-K through higher education? A sales tax dedicated to education, pre-K through higher education. And how many would not? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate you coming, many of you, great distances. The parties coming up will be Jessica Wolf, Patty Abel, Lauren Luck, and parties on deck, Linda Brown, Francois Rowe, and Carolyn Newsert. Please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Wolf, and I am a senior at Canby High School. I'm what many people in Oregon call a transplant. I moved here just before the school year last year, and I have discovered that the Oregon people are definitely a different breed, and I mean that in the best possible way, especially among the FFA members. If it weren't for their willingness to put up with my differences, I would have dropped out of school and would now be trying to reach my GED instead of in 2.5 months be graduating. I entered Canby as a very different person than who I am now. I didn't talk to anyone. I was afraid to speak in front of any person, even just in front of a classroom.
because of the encouragement I received from my peers and my ag teacher, I am now able to lead groups of people. You've probably heard of our ABC trailer, where we travel around and we actually teach students, younger students, about everything, sciences and animals and just anything imaginable. I now am able to, because of the FFA, I can create just little plans and stuff that educate other people, and I can stand up in front of groups of people, even classroom-sized people, and teach them and get points across that people understand. Because of the FFA, I am now able to keep accurate records, and for the past 2.5 years have been running 3 businesses from my own house that are family businesses. Without the FFA, I know that I would not be able to do this. And once I graduate, I'm going to be pursuing business ventures of my own, running our own businesses. And I'd like to make the point that I do not now, nor have I ever, lived on a farm. I'm a first-generation member of the FFA, and I hope that we'll be able to preserve the FFA in Oregon for my children to be a part of. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Devlin and members of the board. My name is Patty Abel, and I am the current FFA advisor at McMinnville High School. In McMinnville, we are considered mostly a city type of situation. My kids don't come from the farm. I think I only have 2 kids, actually, that are farm kids. Most of them are what we call city kids. I myself am a farmer. I live on a farm. You know, I've been a member of the FFA. I grew up with it all my life. And as I look around here, I see the past, present, and future of the FFA and of the Student Leadership Center. Being an advisor has always been a dream of mine. I love working with kids. And as I look around and see all the blue and gold, I am very proud of what the kids have accomplished here today. It's kind of why my goal as an advisor has always been to advise the kids. I am asked to advise them from time to time as a need arises. I don't tell them what to do. The FFA is a student-run organization. Our students are the ones, you know, as you see from their support being here, they are the ones that care for this organization. They are our future leaders. So many people have, you know, that are sitting here have been FFA members, you know, sometime in their life. I benefited from it, and I hope that one day my children benefit from it, as well as the people that we see, you know, that are here to talk to you. Being a teacher, you know, the people before me talked about the cuts and all of that. You know, I'm a young teacher. I've only been a teacher for 5 years. I don't know what it was like to have all the funding. You know, I look at what I have right now and think, wow, you know, if I could have had that funding, what more could I do? I work for my kids, and they work for me, and we work together. And I, you know, would love to have all that funding. I mean, I look at one of my classes I teach as a beginning welding class. I have 16 welding stations. I have 33 kids in the class. You deal with it. That's what I do. That's what I ask my FFA kids to do. When there's a problem, when they, you know, have something to overcome, they deal with it. And we work together, and the kids have been great working. You know, I ask for, you know, support from you and hope that, you know, you provide the funding so that we keep the Student Leadership Center, so that our students will have a chance, you know, to continue as leaders. And, you know, I have a chance to continue working with these great kids that are sitting around me. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lauren Luke. I am a member of the Malala of FFA. I'm the vice president of our chapter, and I'm a junior at Malala High School. I've come before you today to thank you, first of all, for the education that you have helped provide us this far. But it is the student leadership organizations that help us utilize what skills we learn in the classrooms.
I am 16 years old. I own my own business. I have achieved my certificate of initial mastery and qualify already for my CAM. You look before you and see these students that are learning how to own their own businesses, market products, sell products, face America's biggest fear, speaking in front of people. And we owe this to the student leadership organizations. Finally, I would just encourage you to not seek a quick fix to Oregon's economy, but invest your time and money in the long-term goals by educating these students and providing them with the student leadership organizations, because we will not let you down. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, very much appreciated.
Senator Walker.
I'd like to ask Ms. Luke, what is the business that you own?
I own a wholesale koi production company. So,
koi as in fish?
Yes.
I'm impressed. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm equally impressed that you ask us not to look for the quick fix. That's been very long-sighted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll move on to Linda Brown, Francois Rowe, and Carolyn Neusert. And on deck will be David Hazen, Neil Lucht, and Dennis Edestad.
Good morning, Chairman Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Linda Brown, and I'm a member of the Lake Oswego School Board. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to all of us here this morning. For the fourth consecutive year, we are now engaged in a strategic planning process aimed at downsizing and making difficult decisions that are definitely not in the best interest of our students. I provided all of you with detailed documentation regarding the current recommendations that we're considering, but they're things like cutting 12 more teaching positions and eliminating 14 non-teaching positions, which includes all of our high school security guards, continuing to increase our class sizes. Our high school teachers, for instance, are now going to be teaching an average of 168 students. How much individual attention is realistically going to be provided with that many students needing direction and feedback? It takes approximately 15 minutes for an experienced English teacher to give meaningful feedback on a short essay. We're raising our fees to astronomical levels now. Our high school students are going to be asked to pay $250 for a single sport. Middle school students will be paying $150 for a single sport. Whatever happened to the level playing field? And these measures come on the heels of the downsizing efforts that have already occurred, including all of the dramatic cuts that Lake Oswego made throughout the 1990s. In 2002, we cut 25 teaching positions. They were eliminated. They've never been restored. All of our elementary librarians are gone. We have one school nurse for the entire district. We have no drug and alcohol counselor. In an effort to protect teaching positions, we have made extensive cuts to support and to administration at all levels. We have three administrators in our high schools of over 1,000 kids. On a good day, we are relieved. But what happens when it's not a good day with three adults in charge? 2 years ago, we cut 5 days from our school year, and that was instructional time that our students have never recovered. One of our junior high school social studies teachers pointed out to me that the unit she cut was on Ellis Island. That's something her students will never learn about. What units of science were cut? What units of math are our students never learned? That's what 5 days meant. I'm very proud to be a school district leader in Lake Oswego because this last year, 11 of our 13 schools were all rated exceptional by the state. We succeed in educating our children and in preparing them to be contributing, socially responsible adults. But without your help, we are forced to continue dismantling all the things that we know work, all the indicators that we've put in place that work. We're decimating the most fundamental components of the quality education that we know how to provide. And we know that the damage is irreversible in children. We simply cannot continue to whack away at teaching positions and at programs, at curriculum, at the opportunities for our kids without putting at grave risk the future of our state and the vitality of our well-being in Oregon. Money makes a difference in education. We see the results and the achievement of our students. Our community members have recognized this, and they have stepped forward, and by providing charitable contributions to our school foundation, we have managed to keep our class sizes smaller in kindergarten, first, and second grade, where kids are learning those basic fundamentals that we know are absolutely essential. But with the governor's budget this next year, even with comparable charitable giving next year, we won't be able to protect those class sizes any longer. Our carefully husbanded reserves are completely gone. Money makes a difference in education. Stable, adequate resources mean that we would have the ability to plan and to structure predictably. And that means everything when you are planning for the education of a child from age 5 all the way through age 18. There are those who say that we can't afford to put additional funding into education, but I know that we can't afford not to. I'd like to point out that in North Carolina some years ago, the state looked at how to attract new businesses to fill Research Triangle. And what they did was cut all business tax breaks. What they did instead was tell new businesses looking to open business plants in Research Triangle that we will not give you a tax break. But when you're ready to open your doors in a couple of years, we're going to put that money into our educational system and our community colleges. And when you open your doors in a couple of years, tell us what workers you want and what skills you want them to have, and they'll be waiting for you. That's what made them the most successful state in recruiting new business in the country. Senator Devlin, you've represented us here in Salem for many years. And I've been coming to plead before you for money for many years. And frankly, we can't keep meeting like this. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and Senator Vicky Walker. My name is Francoise Rowe Pendleton. I'm a parent of two young sons, one of whom I've decided to bring with me today so that you all could meet him. His name is Miles Rowe Pendleton. He's 6.5 years old, and he attends kindergarten at the Fox Hollow French Immersion School in Eugene. He just began his first K-12 journey this past fall, and it's been a very good journey for him. And that's why I'm here today, to make sure that people understand the need and the value of investing in our children, in their education, and ultimately promoting a greater successful future for the state of Oregon. My husband is also in attendance. He's a substitute math teacher at the Bethel School District. He will be testifying later. Additionally, we're both working professionals. Eugene models a successful public school system in this state and throughout the nation, with its schools consistently surpassing statewide benchmarks, and specifically its 4J school district having at various times been tiered as a top 100 school district throughout the United States. That fact alone is what drew us here 3 years ago from Southern California. I'm not sure if any of you are aware, but yesterday the Harvard University released study results that show that 50% of Latino and African-American students enrolled in Southern California are dropping out. It's why we left. We came here for a brighter future, to help instill in our children the idea of dreaming big and being able to become successful at whatever they choose to do. Eugene School District 4J is the largest school district in Lane County and the fifth largest district in the state. We provide diverse educational experiences for nearly 18,000 students from kindergarten through grade 12. Additionally, we operate 50 different schools and programs within Eugene. Eugene, in general, has students that consistently surpass state benchmarks, and all district schools receive positive ratings based on Oregon state education standards. Students score well above the national and state averages on the SAT test, and the high school dropout rate continues to be notably lower than the state average. Additionally, Eugene has a very unique offering or characteristic in that it embraces and rallies together continuously over the years to support, lobby on behalf of, and pass local measures in support of its public education to help supplement state funding reductions. These would include two local levies to support school programs and student activities. This year, these local levies alone are preserving nearly $12 million in school program funding that is equivalent to 136 full-time staff. However, these measures alone cannot continue to boost and supplement the state's continued spending reductions. These measures, indeed, were originally implemented years ago when the state funding was higher per student in an effort to help pick up the then shortfalls. However, these levies were not created with the anticipation that the state funding would continue to decline a decade later. Yet here we are, 10 years later, Oregon is still placing public education on the chopping block, making Eugene's supplemental measures incapable of supporting the entire framework for Eugene schools. We need to stop the bleeding. We need to maintain at current operating levels. And like so many have testified before me, $5.424 billion doesn't even begin to really enhance a child's experience in the educational world. Additionally, in Eugene, over the last 4 years, we've had to cut 89 positions due to the state funding levels, cut 20 teaching and certified specialist positions due to declining enrollment, and we had to close 5 elementary school sites to reduce non-instructional costs and keep dollars in the classroom. Increased class sizes and reduced programs throughout the district are common. And at some neighborhood elementary schools, we have kindergartens with 30 students at high school levels where my husband teaches at. His eligible class size is 40-plus students. Now, I thought we had all left that behind when we moved up here, but unbeknownst to us, these problems are only surmounting and are showing signs of growing. Few of our elementary schools in Eugene have librarians or even able to update the library collections on a regular basis. Most have cut music and PE. Even though our city levy provides some support for those activities, most schools can only offer those activities once, maybe twice a week. Our middle schools provide the basics and offer few exploratory classes and opportunities. Those opportunities are what enriches the development and the inspiration for children to learn. High schools have virtually eliminated vocational and technical programs and have greatly reduced art, music, business education, foreign language classes, and our principals have had to cut programs that have provided and proved to make a difference for our new struggling students in order to continue programs that serve many students. And on top of all that, we are now serving an increasing number of students with greater needs. We have greater concentrations of students in poverty, greater numbers of English language learners, and a greater number of special education students. So I'm going to close here by simply saying this. As a parent, I look at this boy and my 3-year-old son who's at home, and they give me the reason every morning to get out of bed, put in 40-plus hours a week for my job every week, plus another 10 hours of volunteer service to their schools every single week. They are the reason why I'm here today. They are our future, and I'm asking you all here not to be just the notable and the reputable leaders that I know you to be in support of education. I need you guys to be champions for our children. And you know, there's a senator here on board. Unfortunately, he's not here. I would have loved to address this to Senator Whitsett personally. But if you want to lure businesses here, if you want to really keep them, attract them, you don't give corporate minimum tax bases at $10. What you do is you invest in children. You invest in their education, and you create a workforce that is globally competitive and a workforce that, as they enter into adulthood, wish to remain in this state. Not leave the state as they are doing after they graduate high school, if they're lucky enough to graduate. More and more families are leaving the state, just as businesses are. So obviously the minimum corporate tax is not the lure. It's not what's keeping businesses here. We need to invest in our children. We need to invest in their education, and thereby we create a brighter and better future for this state. Those three things, ladies and gentlemen of the panel, those three things are synonymous with one another. Please, please, please do not cut. Do not cut anymore. Please allow us to stabilize and maintain the funding. I am asking you, I am begging you to please. And when you leave today, look at this. This is why. This is why. Please.
Thank you very much. Ms. Smith.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the panel. Thank you for hearing us today. My name is Caroline Nunzert, and I'm the chair of the Tigard-Tualatin School District Board of Directors, the Tigard-Tualatin School Board. I'm also the parent of two children in that district, so I wear a couple of hats. At the $5.2 billion state funding level that is proposed, Tigard-Tualatin School District will be taking $3.3 million in cuts on a $76 million general fund budget. Were it not for our generous local option tax, which the voters have passed for us twice, the amount would be $8.2 million. Let me tell you a few things about our district. Over the past years, TTSD has done its due diligence in streamlining programs and finding efficiencies. When those processes were done and funds were still short, the district cut school days, programs, and increased class sizes, as did everyone else. Currently, we're missing a number of programs, such as art in the elementaries and after-school sports in the middle school. We no longer fund outdoor school. Services for talented and gifted students at the elementary and middle schools are minimal. We offer few second language experiences and insufficient number of electives at our high schools. Last year, the Oregonian reported our class sizes as some of the largest in the state as we tried to hold on to important programs. While our student population has increased by 1,400 students in the past 10 years, we have added 0.6 teaching positions. That's a big class. I should also note that our school sizes are very large. We house 600 in an elementary school, 1,000, close to 1,000 in a middle school, and 1,800 in our high schools. The $5.2 billion proposed budget, while it provides a small increase over last year's funding, it's only a nominal increase because, in fact, our PERS increase is greater than the increase in funding that our district will receive during the coming year. So, in fact, while it provides an increase, it does not provide an increase to our students. We cannot build programs. We cannot decrease class sizes. We cannot do any of those things because the increase, even at $5.2 billion, will go entirely to our PERS increase. Please do keep that in mind. That is not a cost that we control.
Ms. Nusser and Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Ms. Nusser, the budget on the table is the governor's budget.
Of 5.0. I understand. I'm just hoping that that's not even a possibility. Let me speak to 5.2.
So I just wanted to clarify that.
I am well aware that it's 5.0. That's so nightmarish that I don't even want to consider that. Let me assume that 5.2 is your bottom line.
All right. Thank you.
Next year, our district will open a new elementary school. This is not a luxury for us, given that we have schools currently, at least one elementary school, that houses over 700 students. Our new elementary school hopefully will bring our school sizes in elementary down to the 600 number. Everyone knows that small school sizes are better for our students. Everyone knows this. All the research shows it. Yet we're punished for opening a new school because the overhead on that new school will be $1.3 million for us next year, cutting again into our operating costs. Our district has worked very hard to settle fair labor contracts, keep costs down, and still educate every child. We have been and continue to be accountable. Our community has supported the schools over and over with local option dollars, bond dollars, donations to the foundation, and volunteer hours. They have been accountable. Accountable is a very important word these days, so I'm going to put it back to you. The state needs to be accountable at this point for stable and adequate funding to our schools. To maintain current services levels in our district, which, let me remind you, includes the cuts that I've already outlined for you, but to maintain current service levels, we would need $5.53 billion from the state level of funding. 5.4 won't do it for us. Even at that, we're going to take the cuts. I've been told by a number of people that adequate levels of funding for education and other services will come about as the economy improves over the years. I believe that is true. However, because we have an unstable tax structure, when the economy inevitably declines again after that increase, we have nothing in place to keep us from going down again. I urge you to work on a stable tax system, so that when these increases and declines come to us, we're able to plan and take care of our students appropriately. It's also clear to me, as has been said by several people here today, that the reverse is also true in terms of the economy and the funding. The economy will never improve if education services are not well funded. In the short term, excellent companies will not bring personnel here, and in the long term, you will not have a well-educated workforce. Even at $5.2 billion, as I said, I won't even address 5.0, even at $5.2 billion, we will be taking significant cuts. I've been on the board 4 years. I have done nothing but cut. I would love to be in a position of adding back programs. 5.4 is the absolute minimum that we can live with. Thank you very much for hearing us today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Carolyn, may I offer my congratulations to the wisdom of your board on your selection of your new superintendent.
Our interim superintendent? Dr. Bratton?
Dr. Bratton, yes.
Yes, we're so pleased with him. Thank you.
You should be. He is certainly a fine leader, and he will serve your district very, very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
I just have several crazy follow-up. Jerry gave me a sign one time to Senator Nelson saying, "You're only young once, but you can be immature all your life." So not quite how he meant that, but I've always remembered that. Just some comments, I guess, in your testimony. I appreciate it, and I think this committee is really very aware that we need more money in the system. It's the question how we're going to get there. Really, I think if you look at a whole spectrum of public education, public safety, and public health and natural resources, we need about $1.5 billion more. $1.5 billion more. So we have to be thinking in large, gigantic terms. What do we have billions of? We have billions of board feet of lumber. We have billions of gallons of water coming down the Columbia River. That's how we're going to get to solve these problems. You're talking about North Carolina. North Carolina has a deficit this year, regardless of how they did back in those days. They have a deficit. And Senator Gourley and I sometimes go back and forth about the taxing system. And in the 1980s, there was a sales tax dedicated to education. It was defeated 7-3. The citizens of Oregon have defeated a sales tax 9 times. So, I mean, you guys are pushing at us, and so I'm just going to try and, you know, push it back just a little bit to say that we have a systemic problem. We do need more money for the system, and we're probably not going to get it by taxes. That's just, voters are just, they're not going to do that. And also, there was a question about the population. At least a testimony I've heard in other committees is that the population of the state of Oregon actually is growing. People are moving into the state of Oregon right now. That's causing some of our problem because it's creating more loads upon our schools. I guess the question I have to ask you is, if you have the choice between a spotted owl and a child, what are you going to choose?
Sir, may I respond to that?
Yeah.
That is not the choice.
It is.
I'm sorry. It is not the choice.
Okay. Well, what is the choice then?
We have given options to the legislative panel here through Senator Walker of different revenue sources. And a spotted owl is not even, it's like apples and oranges. I mean, I think you're picking two very emotionally divisive issues and trying to compare them. And I have to tell you, sir, if you really want revenue, start with the corporate minimum tax. You have businesses in this state who have actually written you, called you, and said you can easily increase our corporate minimum tax. You need to invest in the priorities. Mm-hmm. Our children are our priorities, sir.
Okay. Can Senator Nelson
just respond?
Respond.
Corporate minimum tax is only about 5 or 6% of the entire budget. We need $1.5 billion.
But it's a start, and there are eight other revenue sources, sir.
It'll be a long time going before we get to that point. And 85% of our business in the state of Oregon are small businesses. They're small corporations. We have very few big corporations anymore.
And part of the problem is we're not creating a competitive enough workforce, sir. We need to invest.
Can I remind the committee that we still have 17 people left
thank
to
you,
testify
sir.
In about 27 minutes.
Thank you again for the opportunity.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
Ms. Rolfe Pendleton has provided the
yes.
committee with a significant packet that I think is very worthwhile to review.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, in light of your comments, I will forego this. However, just a quick underline of Senator Nelson's comments that I think it's time we start to think in those lines of what we're spending when we do all of these other things, and what we're spending is teachers.
Thank you very much.
Just
Senator Whitson.
I think there are just two facts that need to be addressed. One of them is that in order to maintain the current staffing for the Department of Education, K-12, requires an additional $530 million, almost half a billion dollars, just to maintain the current status quo under the current contracts. That's reality. And the second thing is that if that cost of employee compensation continues to go up, or the cost of education continues to go up as it has, and our current revenue projections are accurate, then by the year 2015, K-12 education will consume all of our general fund and lottery fund budget, all of it. And that underscores what Senator Nelson and Representative Jensen is saying. We cannot ignore that. We have to develop a revenue stream. Raising taxes on people who are the highest poverty level in the United States doesn't get it done. We have to fix the poverty problem. We have to employ people. We have to develop our resources and use them to create wealth. And I'll get off my soapbox.
Now you understand how hard it is for me not to respond at this point.
Yes.
But I will try
to
keep my mouth shut and just do my written testimony.
Thank you very much for your testimony. This is a public hearing, not actually a public debate. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have still at least 15 people left to testify, I think more like 17. The chair is going to exercise the chair's prerogative, and I don't like doing this, but I can probably only keep members here till 11 o'clock. So I'm going to ask everyone that comes up to speak for no more than 2 minutes so that I can get everyone that has come here today, and many of you have waited a fairly long time to speak. So the next parties that I had already called up are David Hazen, Neil Lucht, and Dennis Edestat. And after that, on deck will be Francis Hefferman, Colleen Davis, and Herb Pendleton.
Senator Devlin?
Yes, please proceed.
Committee, my name is Wynn Mayfield. I'm not Dennis Edestad. I'm an agriculture teacher at Malala High School, and I got a class at noon, so I need to address you quickly. My comments are going to be very short. I had some prepared comments here, and listening to what you have to listen to, I'm sure, on a daily basis and here in this committee, is that there are several issues with education, things that people need. One of the things is that you have something that addresses several of the issues that were brought up today, and that is the Student Leadership Center and the Student Leadership Organization. You're looking at connecting kids with communities, creating jobs. That's what we do. You're looking at one-on-one contact between teachers and students to a direct end. That's what we do. You have a vehicle in place that meets several of the requirements that people in this room are asking for, and all we're asking for is for you to continue to fund that. We're talking $5.4 billion. We're looking at $700,000, and I know it all adds up, but we're a pretty small drop in the big bucket for the dollars that you get back. We have, through volunteers and donations and people working, close to $1.5 million worth of services provided through that $700,000 that happens through funding the Student Leadership Center. You're getting paid for having us there, and I think it's an important aspect that you need to understand, and we appreciate your time, and I need to go to school. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Chair Senator Devlin and members of the board. I'm going to bring a different perspective, I guess, to my comments this morning. My name is Neil Luke. I'm an employer from the Malala area, a business leader that wants to bring you a different bit of information with regard to funding of the Student Leadership Center. When we're preparing our youth for employment or for their careers or for running their own businesses, the type of people that we look for when we're growing our business and providing to this struggling economy, natural resource economy, whether some people will choose to admit it or not, in the state of Oregon. I come to a program like this to run around and pass business cards out to all of these young people here that are truly the type of leaders that I want to look for in employees for my business. These are the movers and shakers that are going to fund Oregon's economy for the long term, and that are going to be paying for schools in the long term. And it's just vital that of all the things that we have to choose and consider, and I know that your burden is great, it's very great, as a business owner, managing resources and doling them out in a limited situation, I truly respect your responsibility. But as an employer who also seeks employees for various other business segments I have in other states, it's truly the investment that Oregon has made in the past in maintaining its student leadership organization and the funding to develop those quality people and students that I have found that has made it so much easier to find real quality right here at home and even provide them some opportunities, pardon it, but outside of the state to work within our company. So I truly ask you to consider that when you're making your proposals. I have a quick comment related to Senator Cordley and her quick poll vote. I passionately support increased taxes to fund our schools. I truly believe that a sales tax that actually taxes the children of our state is the wrong way to do it. That's the only comment I have. Thank you for your time.
Yes. Please. My name is David Hazen, for the record. I'm from Clackamas, Oregon, and a member of the North Clackamas FFA chapter. I realize that time is an issue, so I'll try to be brief. As Mount Hood District FFA president and a member of the FFA organization for 3 years, I can truly attest to the value of PTSLOs for the following reasons. First of all, I can attest to the academic value. Students in these programs have the built-in opportunities to meet extended applications and career-related learning standards through their programs. I can also attest to the leadership value. While FFA is focused on agricultural education, I'm from Clackamas in an urban setting. And I find, along with students like me, the importance of leadership opportunities such as holding office positions, public speaking skills, and parliamentary procedure knowledge through this program. I can also attest to the life-changing value that I have seen in countless students in organizations like the FFA. Our program gives students a focus to their education and provides meaning to all the courses that they take. Anyone here in a blue jacket can tell you that there is immense value in all of the activities related to this organization, but only when they are tied to our state association, which is a part of the Student Leadership Development Center. Without funding for this center, my opportunities and the value of my education will be greatly diminished. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks, both of you. Was there actually, someone else came up in his place, but is there still a Dennis Edestad? And would you please come forward? And then we will go on to the next three people I called. Please proceed.
Yes, Senator Devlin and the chairman, members of the board. I'm here representing the Oregon FFA alumni and the National FFA alumni. We are kind of the backbone and the support system for our ag teachers. And I prepared this morning. I woke up at 3 o'clock thinking about all this stuff I got to tell you. So I wrote it all down, and all the kids said it all, so I didn't have to say it anymore. So now I'm going to make this really short, because we're the support system for our ag teachers. And what we do, we're trying to establish a group of elder people that are, some had some FFA experience, some have had no FFA experience. And you don't have to be in our group, you don't have to have been a member of the FFA. All you need to be is interested in promoting agricultural education and professional technical throughout the state of Oregon and the United States. If the ag teacher, for instance, needs to have somebody to drive students here and there to judging contests and special things for them, requiring transportation or supervision of students, that's what our job is. And we've been trying to increase our membership to one for one. For every FFA student, we'd like to have one alumni member to help them. In the state of Oregon now, we have got that down, so there's 3 students for every alumni member. And the only place in the United States that has a one for one is Wisconsin. And they seem to have the knack for growing a lot of alumni members. And what I would like to leave you with is that we do support monetarily throughout our alumni group a lot of money into the school district. Like, for instance, in Malala, Oregon, in the last 10 years, we have put over $100,000 into our FFA program. And you will probably ask, where did all that money go to? And it all went, every penny, to a student someplace. The alumni keeps none of it for themselves. So most of it has gone to transportation and to taking groups here and there, providing for national conventions, state conventions, district conventions, and leadership roles throughout the state of Oregon. So if you have any question where the money is at, we have a very fine set of books, most of them created by our young people. So I urge you to help support that Student Leadership Center so that all the money we put into the program doesn't go down the drain. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next up is Francis Hefferman, Colleen Davis, and Herb Pendleton. And I know you may have written testimony, but could you limit your testimony to about 2 minutes each? Sorry. And on deck will be Ginger Redinger, Linda Bergen, and Steve Hull. Please proceed.
Hi, I'm Francie Heffernan. I'm a retired teacher from Lake Oswego. I taught 24 years. I've shortened my comments as much as I possibly can. I just want to say that our children have had to endure so many cuts, but to me the most detrimental has to do with class size. Think about your family and how many children you have, and think about adding even one child to your family. Each child that comes has such an enormous package of needs, and just trying to split your child in your family with your time with one more child is enormous. The teachers across the state are already stretched beyond their limits trying to meet the needs of these enormous classes. And if we have to add more children to their classes, they just will not be able to do their job. So that's what I want to say. After 24 years, I'm telling you, class size is the biggest part of teaching. No matter how good a teacher you are, if there's too many kids, it's really, really hard to do your job. So I hope that you will try very hard to find the $5.4 billion to keep the class sizes that everybody's already said are too big, so that we don't have to make them any bigger. Thank you for listening.
Much. Hi, Chair Devlin and members of the Education Subcommittee. My name is Colleen Davis, and I live in Portland, Oregon, in Senator Gordley's district. I taught for 27 years for the Tiger-Tualatin School District in many different hats, classroom, elementary classroom, student with learning disabilities. I was involved in a very successful, talented, and gifted pullout program, helped write the mandate for TAG, never ever believing that it wouldn't be funded, staff development and consulting. My passion has been and continues to be providing the best education for every child as if our future depends on it. I grew up in Roseburg, Oregon, and I understand about natural resources. I taught my kids for 27 years about problem solving, about taking what we have in front of us and moving forward. When someone told me I could no longer use the successful reading program that I loved and I had to adopt a new one, change is part of it. There are ways to fund education without taking old growth forests. How many elected officials have promised children are my priority when they were running? Today, we must hold these people accountable by demanding truth to action. We not only need funds, but we must exemplify that children are our priority. If you were to put children first, then everything else would circle around it, and things would look a lot different. Research has clearly stated it's cheaper to fund a child's excellent education than to house that same person in prison. The real estate professionals will tell you that house hunters ask for good schools. Businesses research the school system before they consider settling on land. And now those same businesses tell us today that our schools are not providing an adequate workforce. Many of them leave our state, as many of our citizens are leaving public education, if not the state. Many of the problems in our state can be dealt with excellent education. When kids have relationships, small class sizes, counselors in the school, and so forth, they learn the value of education. They learn the importance of growing up to be a citizen, and those kids more than likely wouldn't be too interested in math, which means then that's less crime. I implore that you look to sacrifice other areas in the budget. I stand for children because children need a voice. Children don't hire lobbyists. They have a right to a safe, supportive environment and a school staff that facilitates an excellent education. If they have a non-mainstream learning style, if they have emotional needs, or excel in an area other than academics, then that excellent education needs to include supportive adults as counselors, PE teachers, librarians, music teachers, translators, and English instructors for ESL students. The needs of children have been sacrificed enough. The much larger population that represents the lower economic bracket, if employed at all, have no resources for big foundation funds or no resources to even be here today to talk to you. When children are marginalized, you and I must speak for them. In the Portland School District alone, they're already making serious cuts, even if we do get $5.4 million. The Portland School District, like most of the districts in the state, have been cutting, doing things more efficiently, and cutting some more. Class sizes get bigger, resources dwindle, supports for all needs are at a minimum, and yet our elected officials can't seem to put education back as a priority. We ought to be talking today about $7.1 billion in support of the quality education model proposal. It puts children and their education as a priority. Instead, I'm here to say that $5.4 billion is the very least amount acceptable, just to keep the state's education somewhat at a current level of service. Stable funding must be figured out. But in the meantime, please stand with me and demand that we fund this biennium at $5.4 billion.
Mr. Phelps.
Chair Devlin, members of the subcommittee, thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning.
My name is Herbert Pendleton, and I reside in Eugene at 1785 Happy Lane. The district that I reside in is Vicki Walker's district. I'm a parent, an educator. I teach as a substitute teacher in the Bethel School District. I'm also a member of Stand for Children, a children's advocacy group. Although I'm going to briefly talk about the situation in the Bethel School District, I think it applies equally well throughout the entire state of Oregon. The basic message is that there should be no further cuts to educational funding here in Oregon. That's basically what I think the message should be. I understand that there are difficult times, that Oregon is facing quite a challenge. But even in spite of that, I believe that further cuts to education will have a dramatic and serious effect on the state of Oregon and its future. As an educator in the Bethel School District, I wanted to share with you briefly some of the facts associated with that district. And I could go into a great deal of detail, but that's not necessary. I think it's fair to say that the cuts that have been experienced by Bethel are quite similar to the cuts that you've just heard about so eloquently and such a large volume already. So I won't dwell on that. I would, however, like to bring to your attention the fact that I see a very unsettling trend here in Oregon, one that is familiar to me, based on the fact that I spent 30 years in California. In California, I was a parent and also a teacher, similar to my situation here. When I first moved to California, I was successful in educating three children in the public school system. They completed public school education, they went on to college, and all are pursuing relatively successful lives in Australia, California, and just recently here in Eugene.
Mr. Pendleton, yes. Could you conclude your testimony?
Okay. Basically, what I wanted to, I guess the fundamental point is that as an American minority, I began my life as in poverty, and through quality education and opportunity, I was able to elevate myself to a middle income type of existence. In California, I was able to provide that type of existence for my children, and I hope to do the same thing here in Oregon. The funding decision should be such that we get the $5.4 billion. I think, well, let me just close by saying that the people who want to immigrate to the United States believe that our streets are paved with gold. I believe that education is the golden path to growth and opportunity. And only by providing that can we ensure that everyone has an equal right and an equal opportunity to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have to move very quickly now. My House members need to leave to go to the floor. I will remain here. The Senate members that wish to remain are excused until we get to the floor. We only have about 7 or 8 people left to testify at this point, and we've had almost 50 this morning.
It's quite admirable for you to sit through all this. Chair Devlin and committee members, I appreciate you letting me testify. I'd first like to tell, let you know that I understand you are in a difficult situation. No one here is the enemy, no one particular party, no one particular point of view.
Please and, identify yourself.
I'm sorry, I'm Ginger Redlinger. I'm a member of the Service Employees International Union. I'm here as representing all the union employees at the Department of Education. I'm not here representing the agency itself, but the workers. I will be brief. I just want you to know what I've done over the last 2 years, what my typical day looks like, and what cuts may do to who I can help when. I help parents, everyone from parents who call because they don't know what to do. Their children have been suspended from schools. They're on drugs. They're in gangs. They don't know where to go for help. I also get calls from parents 5 minutes later asking how to interpret school report card information, how to make good decisions for their children. Secondly, the school districts and administrators. I get calls from superintendents that say, how do I help my high school go from an unacceptable one to an exceptional one? And I help them do that in one high school. I've helped turn around in 2 years to go from that poor score to an acceptable score. Thirdly, industry, business, and labor groups. They all want to help each other, but they don't know who to talk with, when, or how, and that's also the role that I play on a daily basis. And then I'm also a teacher still. I meet with 74-year-old volunteers that want to understand the standards so that they can help their students in the schools. I work with young adults, student teachers, new teachers, and experienced and gifted teachers as well. My former students contact me, and I ask them how we can improve their educational offerings. As you can see, as an education program specialist, my duties and responsibilities are huge. If the governor's budget is accepted as it is, I don't know which people will get served and how, because we will not be able to provide the services at the level that we could in the past. If we take an $11.8 million cut, we won't be able to offer the services. When most people make a phone call and they need help, there may be no one to answer the phone, and I don't know how we're going to do that. So please read my testimony, and thank you for taking the extra time. I really appreciate it.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Chair Devlin and the rest of the committee members, I also appreciate having you here. My name is Linda Bergen. I'm a research analyst for at the Oregon Department of Education. And I was asked to testify today. I'm actually testifying on behalf of SEIU and the other SEIU members about workload issues at the Oregon Department of Ed. When they thought about who they wanted to testify about workload issues, I easily came to mind. I'm the person who produces the Oregon statewide report card, and I also have inherited an almost impossible workload. When Bob Jones retired last year, last July, I inherited early leavers, which gives us the counts of diplomas and other certifications from the schools and districts, and has just recently been put on a consolidated format, meaning that we're collecting data by student level. It's a first-time survey, and it's been riddled with all kinds of problems. I inherited that. I also inherited the dropout rates. That's the early leaver survey, and I'm also knee-deep in trying to produce rates there. I work 12-hour days. I honestly, my whole life is work. Am I working overtime? I definitely am working overtime. I have the Oregonian breathing down my neck right now for dropout rates. They think we're withholding them, which is pretty humorous from my standpoint. I wish I could finish them so I could get on with it. But anyway, I just want you to know that I'm not unique. There are other people that have workloads that may be similar to mine at the department. But I know that a lot of what I do, in addition to what I just mentioned, I also provide grant statistics that bring in millions of dollars to educators at the schools and districts. I produce the kindergarten readiness report. I produce all kinds of different pieces of different data requests and analyses that various people need for policy reasons. I want to encourage you to read my testimony. You have a copy of it in front of you. I talk about job assignments that I have there. Also, a short blurb about the high school completers consolidated survey and some of the problems we've had. A list of just 1 month's worth of data requests, which I keep a copy of all data requests, and and also what I haven't had a chance to analyze in the last 6 months, just to show you the dearth of analysis that is going on. And then finally, the training I've missed in the last 6 months that helped me be a good researcher. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Senator Devlin, members of the subcommittee, I'm Steve Hall. I'm the superintendent of the Bethel School District. I'm here on behalf of our board of directors, and thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for all the hard work that you're doing. We are a frugal, fiscally responsible district. We've done a number of things to change the way we do business. We are moving ahead. There's some statistics you have there. We have four exceptional schools this year, up three from the previous year, which was our highest. We have one of the six schools in the state of Oregon is being acknowledged as closing the achievement gap more than any other schools in the state. We have a nationally recognized reading program, K-3, where we do not have any achievement gaps, and you can see the statistics there. So I want to let you know, business in the Bethel School District isn't business as usual. It's business in a different way. And we are struggling with funding to continue moving ahead in some new ways of educating our children and organize how we do business. Some of those challenges you have there, we have cut budgets, including this year, this coming year. We will have cut budgets seven of the last 8 years. A total operating dollars, $3.5 million, which is just slightly under 10% of our operating budget. Plus, we've used cash reserves to try to keep us going as long as possible. You can see we've eliminated 14 teaching positions in the last 2 years. You see our counselor workloads at the high school. You can see we have one librarian now in a school district of 5,700 kids. Our challenges are to meet our mission statement, which is we together as a community will reach, teach, and inspire each student to excellence. And excellence means every student graduating ready to go to college and be successful, or high-wage post-technical training after high school. To do that, we now have a projected budget gap of $3.8 million, which is 10% of our operating budget between what we need and what we would expect to have under a $5.1 billion budget. That's what we are basing our budget on. We are asking for a minimum of the 5.4. We need actually 5.9 to close that gap, and we know that that may not be realistic. Where we will have to adjust based on what you're able to do will likely be class size, school days, and some of those programs like math, where we really need to move ahead. We know how to move ahead. We have a model that we'll take from our reading project, but we need resources to do that. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Jessica DeVries, a Miss Anderson, and an Amberly. I don't know if it's a miss. I can't read the first name. Okay. Please give your name for the record, and please limit your testimony to a couple of minutes each.
Good morning. My name is Jessica DeVries, and I am from the Cascade FFA chapter. FFA, what does it mean to you? Some see it as an organization that's all about animals and farming. But for those who have been a part of it, they know that it is so much more than that. Students in FFA learn many skills that will be beneficial to them throughout their lives, such as responsibility, leadership, hard work, teamwork, dedication, and many other career skills. The many contests that FFA offers help students apply the knowledge that they've learned to real-world situations. Community service and ag literacy are other activities that many FFA chapters are involved in. I can guarantee you that nearly all FFA members have stories to tell about what FFA has done for them. Here's mine. Imagine this. A young girl warming the bench on her school's basketball team. She always wanted to do well, but basketball never quite worked out, so she can continue to warm the bench. In cross country, she ran apart from the pack, not in the front, but pacing herself near the back. Now imagine this same girl in another competitive activity. She's striving and actually reaching the top. Her physical abilities that are really beyond her control no longer have anything to do with her fate. And best of all, this contest is helping her build her future and teaching her skills that she can use in almost any career. This contest that helped her succeed is an FFA contest, and that girl is me. FFA has done so much for me ever since I entered the program as a shy eighth grader. I really only joined because all of my siblings and my dad had been members of the Cascade FFA chapter, and I was born and raised on a dairy farm. I also like showing my Holsteins at county and state fairs. I really wasn't planning on doing much outside of dairy judging and showing. However, that changed when I began doing other contests. The more contests I did, the more I wanted to do better. I was encouraged to try harder and do better in each contest that I entered. Before FFA, I was quiet, and my biggest fear, like the majority of Americans, was public speaking. My freshman year, I needed extra credit in my agriculture class, so I entered the creed speaking contest. It turned out that public speaking really wasn't so bad after all. In fact, I kind of enjoyed it. I tried a variety of other contests after that, and I worked hard to be the best that I could. I was very successful in nearly all of the contests that I participated in, but it was only through hard work and practice that I was able to do so. Now here I stand, a senior in high school, an honor roll student, a winner of numerous FFA banners and awards, Cascade FFA chapter president, a college-bound student, but above all, I stand here as one of thousands of FFA members who has found success through the FFA. I have learned so much through the FFA, and I hope that Oregon FFA can continue to provide success to numerous students of both the present and future. The organization is larger than ever, and it continues to grow each year. However, if it does not receive proper funding, it could jeopardize all that the present and past members of the Oregon FFA have worked so hard for. Please stand with me and my fellow FFA members in giving all that we can to promote and support this great organization called FFA. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Jace Anderson. I'm a senior at Cascade High School, the Cascade FFA Vice President and past Capital District President. I come before you this morning just feeling compelled to share with you what the FFA has given to me over my 4.5 years as a member of it. I come from a long generation of family who have been involved in agriculture fields, whether it's not just ranching and farming, so to speak. My father and grandfather have both been in jobs related to agriculture and lived on a ranch themselves and just ranching aside. Myself, I feel that in my future, I'd like to be just a rancher and not have the other jobs on the side. But to be just a rancher, it takes a lot of education. You can't just go out and have a cow and expect to know what to do. So when I entered high school, I decided to enter the FFA with the goals of learning more about the agriculture perspective and the actual farming of it, even though most people don't come out of FFA heading for farms anymore. But as I got to know more and more what's going on in FFA, I began to enjoy more of what FFA is teaching about leadership, public speaking. I began to get interested in all the other elements the FFA promotes besides just farming and cows and plows, which it was based on but does not promote just solely anymore. When I entered FFA, I figured, maybe I'd run for a chapter office my senior year, maybe Sentinel. I ran for chapter office my sophomore year. I've served as chapter officer for 3 years. I ran for a district office in my junior year and got district president. And this last year, just a week ago at our state convention, I ran for state FFA office. Although I did not get it, I am grateful that the FFA gave me the confidence and the ability to even run. Lastly today, I want to leave you with one last statement that I'm saying just to try and get across what the FFA has done for me. I'm a senior in high school. I'm counting the days to graduation and I can move on with my life. But I'm dreading the days when I cannot put this blue and gold jacket on anymore because of what the FFA has taught me. I've learned a lot through FFA, but I still feel that there's numerous amounts of knowledge that FFA can teach me. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Amber Lee. I'm a member of the Cascade FFA chapter, and I'm the Capital District President currently, and pretty much everything that I had to say, everybody's repeated 10, 12 times, so there's no need to repeat it this lack of time. Basically, all I have to say is, here's the bottom line. A little over $700,000 for the future of leadership in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was from the heart.
We have two groups left. Very quickly, Brad Perk. I cannot pronounce the last. I can't actually read the last name. And let's see, Charlie Van
Vandehay. And Kathy Sansoni. Okay. Please proceed.
It's Brad Perkins, 1508 Northeast Schuyler, Portland, Oregon. Member of Stand for Children. Main topic that I want to encourage the board to look at here is the funding a minimum of $5.4 billion for the next biennium. Without going into any statistics, you've heard enough, seen enough. I am totally enamored coming here today and sitting amongst these leaders, future leaders of the state of Oregon. And you had two young ladies flanking you today that I hope will take on the role of leadership in this state in the future. And I hope that this experience that they had today is a lesson, a civics lesson, of how they can participate in improving the state of Oregon. Tens of thousands of kids today should be here talking, but they can't. They're in school. They are not capable of representing themselves to a large degree because of their commitment to going to school. But in every community throughout the state, the foundation of those communities are schools. That's how the pioneers first felt was needed. The first building was usually a school before even a church. Since Measure 5, the pie that we have dealt with has been decreased for per capita funding for schools per kid. I'm here to challenge you, Senator Devlin, and the board, and the governor, to push harder for a restructuring of our tax system so that we don't have to face these boards again. We should have adequate funding for schools on a permanent base that can be depended upon. And it's not looking at something in a very minute and narrow term. It's not trees, it's not the Spotted Owl, it's not the Columbia River. It's looking at the whole perspective, looking outside the box. I'm part of PBA, Portland Business Alliance in Portland. I'm pushing for education committee so we can push towards ways in which we can better fund schools. But the other part of that is trying to push the human resource side, maybe dovetail more within the school systems as business leaders to help with the kids that are different from the leaders that we have here, but the kids that will be lost in the system if we don't do more to get them on board as the importance of education and maybe dovetail them into a job after they get out of school. In the real estate group in which I'm involved with, we are also looking at ways in which we can better fund affordable housing. The real estate agency in the next biennium, the next 2 years, will be facing the possibility of better funding affordable housing. Now,
I'll finish right here.
Right now, we have to discuss removing the kicker, increase corporate tax, increase state percentage of gambling funds to schools, raise beer, cigarette tax, because no one wants to talk about sales tax. If you're not going to talk about sales tax, the other possibility of those measures, and Stanford Children has already come out and stated that. Right now, the state of Washington is talking about raising taxes in order to decrease the size of schools. They're doing their job. It's time the state of Oregon does theirs as well. So I challenge the leaders of the legislature to push the envelope and try and find a way in which we can better fund schools for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Charlie Vandehei, Agricultural Science and Technology Instructor at Forest Grove High School. Again, thank you very much for your time. I'll try to be brief here. I grew up in an FFA family. If you didn't know the FFA creed by the time you were in seventh grade in my family, you were behind the curve. I was a state officer, had a cousin who just retired, and two aunts and uncles. And I'm pleased to be able to take over my home chapter in its 75th year of existence. What I'm here today to talk to you about is educational reform. I'm in my third year of teaching, and I grew up in about Measure 5 era, and as you look at educational reform that the state legislature and the ODE has been putting on to schools, professional technical student organizations such as those within the Student Leadership Center have been the lead in developing career-related learning experiences, career-related learning standards, and academic content standards within the classroom. As ag teachers, we have been in servicing on these standards for years, and part of what happens when you take a look I can speak specifically to the FFA program. Our agriculture instructors, which represent we have ag programs in over half of Oregon's 200 school districts, have been the leaders when we go back to our own home school districts to help to put in new educational reforms and be able to facilitate these new items and new areas within our own school districts. And without the Student Leadership Center, it's going to be difficult for us to service those. At my own district, we have a Viking plant program where we raised $43,000 in sales through our greenhouse last year, paid $1,100 hours of salary to students for after-school jobs. We had over 4,000 hours of student labor in our chapter farm with our chapter sheep project, and our total income was well beyond any of my salary. And so I appreciate all of your time and ask you to continue support. Thank you.
Could you speak quickly, and can I also have Ms. Landon and Ms. Center come up also? If the other two speakers could leave. Senator Nelson and Senator Whitson and I have to leave for the floor shortly, so we only have about a minute each for all of you, and we have to run to the floor. So that's about as much time as I can get out of the Senate President. So,
well, thank you for your extra time today. My name is Kathy Sansoni. I am a retired teacher. I taught for 31 years in schools here in the Valley, and I'm a member of Stand for Children. I think you've heard all you need to hear in an excellent way today about what's happened with cuts to schools, and so I'm not going to go into any more of that right now. My job right now involves supervising student teachers with both OSU and George Fox University, and a concern I want to add to the pot, however, is that we are investing in a lot of excellent young teachers who are really looking beyond the borders of our state for employment because of what's happened to education here. So let's stop that before any more of that wonderful talent leaves the state. I do want to really emphasize this morning the solutions that Stand for Children has brought to you as ways of solving or beginning to solve this crisis in education. It took us a long time to get into this crisis, and it'll take us a while to get out. But I think if we pay special attention to some of these items, we can make a difference. Maximizing lottery revenue for school, we've been there to the Lottery Commission. We've lobbied them to shift more of that money to schools where it belongs to provide that quality of life. Ending tax giveaways. There are about 174 tax breaks in Oregon right now that aren't serving the public good. We really need to look hard at those. Cracking down on tax evaders, bringing in that revenue that really should be coming into the state right now, and adjusting corporate taxes. And I know that's my time, but let's pay serious attention to those. Thank you very much.
Cut you short. Miss Landon?
No, I'm Miss Syntech.
Oh, okay. Is there still a Miss Landon here? No. Okay. Please proceed.
For the record, my name is Brittany Syntech. I'm a Sandy High School graduate, a member of the Sandy FFA chapter, and I just retired as the state FFA secretary. And I'm coming here today with a different perspective on things. I know that you've heard from a lot of outstanding FFA members and members of other PTL SLOs around the state who have won various awards and recognition, but I want to tell you about someone who's very close to my heart, and that someone is a guy named Brian. He sat in the back of my class in my introduction to agriculture class someone who we can all identify with. He was very quiet, very shy. He didn't know who he was as a person. His parents were out of the picture. And FFA really gave him a family and a community to hold on to. And because of that, it leads me to believe that FFA is a very proactive program that invests in the future of children, not just those who will go off to college, but those who will compete in every aspect of the workforce. And for that reason, I just want to tell you that Brian, he's working at the Portland International Airport with hopes of becoming a pilot. He's not on the unemployment line or in our prisons. He was a positive example of what FFA can do for young people. And that leads me to my conclusion. It brought me back to a movie that I watched when I was very young called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And I know that we've all heard people who are very passionate today. And I just want to say that FFA, whenever we're on the chopping block, will come and stand for what we know is right. And we hope you do the same thing. Thank you.
You very much for your testimony. Thank you all for coming. I'm sorry it's taken so long. But with that, I will close the hearings on SB 5509, SB 5510, and close this meeting till tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Very good, sir.